to order. We have enough testimony here to keep us till Wednesday, it looks like. So what we'll do is try to have a brief introduction of the issue. Of course, we're holding a public hearing on Senate Bill 854. Very brief comments. Judith, do you want to make any comments first, or are we just... Okay, let's just start trying to get our hands around the issue and get some stuff on the public record. Hardy, welcome this morning. We're glad you're here.
Thank you, Chair Shields and members. For the record, Hardy Myers, Attorney General. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 854, which addresses legal issues facing Oregon's 28 commodity commissions. Whether Oregon should have a system of agricultural commodity commissions and what the functions of those commissions should be is a policy decision for the legislature and the governor to make. The Department of Justice takes no position on the policy issue. The role of the department, the role in which I appear today, is simply to help the legislature and the governor ensure that any commodity commission system that is adopted is lawful in its form and operation. Senate Bill 854 was precipitated by a 2001 United States Supreme Court decision that held a government violates the First Amendment of the United States Constitution when it compels persons to pay assessments to fund promotional speech. This decision called into question whether Oregon's commissions were functioning in a constitutional manner. These issues were thoroughly reviewed with the commissions. And from the start, we have all worked to address the legal issues in a way that would minimize any practical effect on the commission operations. Richard Whitman and Shannon O'Fallon from the Department of Justice will be testifying more specifically about the legal issues and how the legislation is drafted to address them. But I wanted to take this opportunity at the outset of the testimony to convey the seriousness of the problem and the importance of moving this legislation forward as a proactive measure to ward off litigation or reduce the likelihood of its success. Brief history. In June 2001, the U.S. Supreme Court decided United States against United Foods, a case involving a constitutional challenge to the Mushroom Promotion, Research, and Consumer Information Act. The Mushroom Promotion Act authorized the creation of the Mushroom Council, which, like Oregon's commodity commissions, imposed mandatory assessments on mushroom producers to pay for the promotion of mushrooms. The court held that the collection and expenditure of mandatory assessments under the Act for promotion was unconstitutional, violating the producers' rights under the Free Speech Clause of the First Amendment, which has been interpreted to forbid government from compelling a person or group of persons to fund speech with which they disagree. Just a few years earlier, the Supreme Court decided Glickman against Wildman Brothers and Elliott, a challenge to the constitutionality of marketing orders governing the California tree fruit industry. In Wildman, the court held that expenditure of mandatory assessments to pay for speech was not unconstitutional because the tree fruit industry was part of a larger, comprehensive regulatory scheme that displaced many aspects of independent business activity. The funds used for promoting products were part of a, quote, broader collective enterprise in which the producer's freedom to act independently, unquote, was already constrained by a regulatory scheme. And as long as the advertising was germane to a valid scheme of economic regulation, the First Amendment was not implicated. Now, in deciding United Foods, the court distinguished Wildman, finding that the primary purpose of the marketing order that mandated mushroom handlers to pay assessments was generic advertising, and the promotion was not incidental to a comprehensive scheme of economic regulation. Most of Oregon's commodity commissions exist primarily to promote particular commodities and are not part of a broader collective enterprise in which the producers' or growers' freedom to act in the marketplace is constrained by a comprehensive regulatory scheme. Now, there are two approaches that could be taken to reduce the legal risk to the commissions and their boards while ensuring the continued operation of commissions in the same manner as they currently do. First, the commissions could continue to collect mandatory assessments and use them for promotion if it is clear that the speech involved is government speech. That is, that an entity, clearly part of state government for speech purposes, is responsible for the ultimate content of the speech. The basic premise of government speech is that the government may use taxes or assessments to pay for its own speech. The second approach would be to design Oregon's commodity promotion program to conform to the Supreme Court's decision in Wildman. For most commissions, this would require the addition of comprehensive economic regulations, such as price or output controls, that would interfere with many aspects of independent business activity. The purpose of the bill. Senate Bill 854 is designed to clarify that promotional activities of Oregon commodity commissions are actions the state has sanctioned and continues to oversee as a legitimate means of promoting the state's economy. The legislation is intended to make it clear to any reviewing court that the promotional speech of Oregon's commodity commissions is government speech. The legislation does this primarily by giving the Oregon Department of Agriculture the responsibility to oversee the promotional programs of the commissions. Another purpose of this legislation is to address a separate legal issue, the possibly improper delegation of legislative authority to growers. If the litigation challenge to the current assessment and expenditure system were made based on the United Foods case, we expect it would be a case filed under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, a federal civil rights statute, and would seek to impose individual liability on commissioners. Section 1983 claims for damages against the state itself or against state officials in their official capacity are not permitted. Section 1983 damages based on individual liability can include compensatory and punitive damages and a plaintiff's attorney fee award. In addition to the elements of a recovery, the costs of a Section 1983 case, even if unsuccessful, include the costs of defense. When a state official is sued under Section 1983 in his or her individual capacity, the official is entitled to a qualified immunity from liability. That is, the official is liable only for violations of clearly settled federal law, which the defendant, absent extraordinary circumstances, has a duty to know. Although we would contend that the law is not yet clearly settled relating to a Section 1983 challenge to Oregon's assessment and expenditure system, we cannot be certain about the success of that position. In any event, there are two federal district court cases making their way to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals involving commissions that impose mandatory assessments. These cases will likely create clearly settled law for purposes of a Section 1983 challenge to Oregon's system, even if clearly settled law does not yet exist. It is the longstanding policy of the state to defend state officials who are sued for individual liability under Section 1983 and to indemnify them for any money judgment against them as long as the challenged actions occurred in the performance of the official's duties and did not constitute malfeasance or willful or wanton neglect of duty. The costs, including the indemnity costs of defending a Section 1983 challenge to a particular commission's assessment and expenditure system, will ultimately fall on the resources of that commission through the assessment system of the Office of Risk Management of the Department of Administrative Services. And if the particular commission cannot pay the increased assessment, risk management will seek payment of any shortfall from the general fund. Thus, considered in terms of exposing public resources, whether those be the resources of the individual commissions or of the general fund, The issue I believe the legislature should focus on is not whether defense of individual commissioners would be available in litigation if Senate Bill 854 does not pass. The issue instead is the likelihood of litigation success absent Senate Bill 854. And while I'm not going to try to quantify that risk in public testimony, the measure before you, as I testified earlier, arises from serious concerns about Oregon's current assessment and expenditure system in light of the United Foods decision. In working with the commissions, we have proposed what we believe are the minimum elements that are reasonably necessary to reduce the risk of successful litigation against the commission programs. We cannot guarantee that there will be no litigation if Senate Bill 854 passes, and we cannot guarantee that such litigation can be successfully defended if Senate Bill 854 passes. We can say, however, that Senate Bill 854 will significantly reduce the likelihood of successful litigation. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today. Before closing, I'd also like to acknowledge, give sincere thanks to several of the members of the commissions for their help and cooperation in working with the Department of Justice in the development of Senate Bill 854. And I respectfully urge the committee to approve Senate Bill 854. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Hardy. Are there questions? I'm assuming there may be. Assistants want to make some comments? Yes.
I would indeed. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we now have a somewhat clear understanding of the legal issues involved. When I say somewhat clear, it's way over the head of a lot of us lay people.
Did you put your name in for the record?
Yes, I'm Sheldon Pratt. I am the administrator of the Oregon Dairy Products Commission. And my role in the next 3 or 4 minutes is to lay the groundwork, some of the background on how we got to where we are this morning and this legal evaluation. I've been with the commission, the Dairy Products Commission, for in excess of 20 years. I also am the administrator of a couple of regional commissions in the dairy industry and also serve on some national committees. That context gives me some exposure and background to the whole environment of generic commodity programs in this state, other states, and at the national level. 5 or 6 years ago, several of us in the industry started evaluating, or at least watching, the various legal challenges occurring in other states and certainly at the national level. To date, we've had no such challenge against an Oregon Commodity Commission, but we were concerned. With the help of the Oregon Department of Agriculture, a committee or meeting was pulled together in July of 2001. All 28 commodity commissions had representatives at that meeting. The Department of Ag has been a tremendous resource in this evaluation of our legal exposure. It should be noted that Department of Agriculture has historically had oversight responsibilities to all of the commodity commissions who, in fact, are currently and always have been state agencies. The Department of Agriculture, their director is an ex officio member on each commission. They review monthly minutes. They review all of our financial statements. They have to sign off on all of our contracts. And I can tell you that's not just a procedural thing. Even after all these years, occasionally we'll have a contract sent back to me. They evaluate our annual budget. They certify that and file it with the Secretary of State for us. They appoint, for most of us commissions, they appoint our commissioners for those commissions that have a referendum process for electing commissioners. They supervise and run that commission or that referendum. So they are actively involved. Their role in life is to help the commissions keep out of legal trouble. They've been a real resource on this whole project. At the state agency, our legal counsel is the Department of Justice. At that meeting back in July of 2001, Department of Justice had a representative there. The commission's raised the question. We've been watching all of this, the legal challenges. It's a moving and continues to be a moving landscape. Our question to Department of Justice is, do we, as Oregon Commodity Commissions, have legal vulnerability with all of this? The commissions voted unanimously to commission the Department of Justice to do a legal review. We agreed all commissions to pay our prorated share of that legal expense. Department of Agriculture stepped in and paid a portion of that as well. So in September of 2002, we heard the report back from the Department of Justice. There were some surprises in that. Certainly some of those findings were not a great surprise. So Department of Justice and Department of Agriculture have been a resource working on this project, again, at the request of the commissions. With that background, I'd like to turn it over to Department of Justice again.
All right. For the record, my name is Richard Whitman. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Oregon Department of Justice. And thank you for the opportunity, Chair Shields, to testify today on this. What I want to do is very briefly give you a little bit more context in terms of what's going on around the country on this issue, both in terms of legislative responses to the U.S. Supreme Court decision in 2001, United Foods, that you've already heard briefly about, and then in terms of ongoing litigation that's going on around the country as well, challenging both national checkoff programs in the agriculture industry and state programs as well. First of all, in terms of state legislative responses to the United Foods decision in 2001, basically there are two possible types of state legislative responses to that court decision in order to allow commodity commissions to keep operating. One is to, as the Attorney General testified a minute ago, make the promotional activity of the commission an ancillary part of comprehensive economic regulation. This is the so-called Wileman defense. It's essentially the approach that was adopted in our neighboring states to the north and to the south, in Washington and in California. Immediately after the United Foods decision, both states adopted legislation that was designed to make the promotional programs of the state commodity commissions be a part of a broader program for economic stabilization and promotion in those agricultural industries. The other type of possible legislative approach is, you've also heard about, is the so-called government speech defense. And here the legislation would ensure that any promotion that is being undertaken by these commissions be subject to clear government oversight and control. That approach has been followed to some extent in the state of Colorado. So what have we seen on the litigation front since United Foods? There are dozens of court cases pending around the country on these issues. There are 8 reported decisions primarily in the federal courts that apply the United Foods decision. Very recently, within the last, and most of those 8 decisions come very recently, within the last 6 months, we're now getting opinions from U.S. district courts and even the U.S. circuit courts at the rate right now of about 1 per month. Very recently, we had a preliminary decision by U.S. district court in Washington that granted a preliminary injunction halting the Washington Apple Commission from collecting assessments and rejecting the effort by the Washington state legislature to protect its programs by using a so-called Wileman defense. The court found that the legislation that had been adopted by the Washington legislature did not, in fact, make the apple industry in Washington part of a comprehensive scheme of economic regulation for that industry, notwithstanding some legislative findings to that effect. Also recently, we have a decision by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in a case called Delano, which strikes down the assessment program of the California Table Grape Commission. That's a state commission also. So we have two challenges to our north and to our south, the state commissions. On the positive side, recently we have several decisions from U.S. district courts upholding promotion programs based on a government speech type approach, the second alternative legislative means of continuing these programs. First of all, in the charter case coming out of Montana district court, the district court upheld the beef promotion program on the basis that the promotion that was being done was subject to extensive oversight by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and it accepted the so-called government speech defense. Then also very recently from the District Court for the District of Columbia, we have a decision upholding the California avocado program promotion, again on the basis of that that promotion program is subject to extensive oversight by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So we're seeing some trend in these cases coming down, and I think the trend explains the direction that we've taken in crafting this legislation. It appears from what we're seeing in the courts after United Foods so far that the programs that are being upheld are the ones that rely on having a promotional program that is tied to government oversight and government responsibility for the promotional speech that is actually undertaken. That appears to be the main way that courts are accepting these types of programs, and that is, in fact, the basis upon which we have drafted, with the assistance of the commissions and Oregon Department of Agriculture, this legislation.
Excuse me, was that the weakness then in the Washington legislation, which didn't hold up in defending the Apple Commission?
Neither the state of, Chair Shields, the state of Washington did not try to, in its legislative effort, seriously create a government speech defense for the Apple Commission. That was one of the bases for the defense in the court case, but the court essentially summarily rejected that type of defense for the Apple Commission because the promotional campaign of the Apple Commission was not subject to control and oversight by any state entity. So that was the problem.
And in that regard, then, that legislation is substantially different than the Oregon legislation, the legislation that failed to do its job in Washington.
Yes, Chair Shields, that's correct. So in closing, I'm going to turn this over to Shannon O'Fallon to go through the bill in a little bit more detail. But we've worked carefully with the 28 commodity commissions on this, the Oregon Department of Agriculture, in crafting this to try to create a legislative framework that does as little as possible to change how these commissions actually operate. And to not interfere with the system that everybody has worked with over the years. We've met with a number of interest groups on this, including representatives from both the forest products industry and the agriculture industry. We've worked on some possible amendments to the bill that we hope are responsive to some of the concerns that have been identified. And finally, we feel strongly that the bill does a reasonable amount in terms of protecting these commissions from legal attack, but it's, as the Attorney General testified, by no means a guarantee of success. So we could offer more if you really want to protect these things with a higher degree of certainty, but we've tried to balance between not interfering with the way these entities work and giving them a reasonable basis for being defended in court.
Go ahead.
My name is Shannon O'Fallon. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Justice, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My task is to try to walk you quickly through the bill.
Okay, look, we're talking here. Let's walk through it very quickly. Given the amount of testimony we've got, most of us have looked at it. Particularly, I guess we might want to hear a little bit about the amendments, but go ahead.
I can work those in as well. We only got the amendments just this morning, so I haven't been able to look at them in detail. Would it be just helpful if I hit the parts of the bill that address the legal concerns, or would you like me to go through it more thoroughly?
Well, as I guess I'd like to hear before we get too detailed into the particulars in the bill, because I think the bill is going to be changing as we work it in the next few days or weeks. So I guess just very brief with the highlights, that maybe the sticky points still or something like that, so that we can move forward.
Okay, I will try to do that. Section 2 of the bill is important. It adds legislative findings that underscore the importance of commodity commissions to the state of Oregon and its citizens. This section is intended to make it clear that commodity commissions are not just private industry organizations, but serve as an arm of government and serve the public good. Section 4 requires the Department of Agriculture to appoint all the members of the commissions. Some commissions now can elect their commissioners, and we've seen that as a possible non-delegation problem under the state constitution. We have also suggested that all the commissions add a public member, again, to bolster a government speech argument to make commissions look a little bit more public and a little bit less private. Section 8 is the section that creates all the commodity commissions in... Oh, wait, that's Section 8. Section 14 creates all the commissions in statute. As you probably know, some of the commissions were created by petition, and again, that's been seen as a possible problem under the state constitution, under the non-delegation doctrine.
Yes. Senator Beyer.
Is the Oregon Forest Resource Institute included in this bill? Is that going to take a separate bill?
They have a separate bill. Let me see. I think I skipped one section that deals with an amendment. In Section 6 is the section of the bill that creates all the duties and authorities of the commissions. And that Section 14, which is actually on page 4, lines 34 through 41, at the request of the Farm Bureau, the commissions have proposed an amendment that would delete that section. That section would have allowed the Director of Agriculture and the commissions to adopt rules that would basically establish a marketing order, making the commissions look like operate like those commissions that passed the wildland test that you heard about earlier. And the commissions and the Farm Bureau decided that that's not a direction that they wanted to go. So that section's supposed to be taken out. Section 22 is the section that deals with the authority of the Department of Agriculture and the director of the Department of Agriculture. This is really at the heart of the government speech argument. This would allow the director to review and approve or disapprove all promotional plans of the commissions. And again, working with the Farm Bureau and the commissions, there's a proposed amendment that would... There's been concern about the breadth of this authority by the department. And so we've tried to narrow it in some ways without taking away our legal argument that there is this actual oversight. And so the amendment would say that the department is supposed to consider whether or not the information in the promotional plan is factual, making sure that it's not disparaging to other commodities and is consistent with the other purposes in ORS 576. Thank you. The Section 25 sets out the qualifications of commissioners, and again, working with other folks in the Farm Bureau, we've tried to ease their minds a little bit about this public member. The public member must have an active interest in the positive development and economic growth of the commodity industries. So you're going to see an amendment that changes that qualification a bit. Section 33 gives the commissions a few more tools in their attempts to collect delinquent assessments, and the way the bill is written now, it allows the subpoena of records for someone who owes the commission an assessment. And again, there was concern from the Farm Bureau that the way the language is written was a little overbroad, so we've narrowed it to make it clear that only records relating to the collection of the assessment could be subpoenaed by the commission. In Section 35, we had initially proposed for an increase in criminal penalties for someone that didn't comply with ORS 576. Criminal penalties already apply. We just looked at increasing those a bit, and again, at the request of the Farm Bureau, with an amendment, we've proposed that any increase in criminal penalties be taken out. Those are the highlights of the bill as far as addressing the legal concerns and addressing some of the concerns that we've had from Farm Bureau. I will also say that with the proposed amendments, we have added back in the Wheat Commission's statutes, though they are changed in some regard. The Wheat Commission felt strongly that they wanted to keep their own statute, which is an ORS 578, I believe. So we've put that back in. Also, the Wheat Commission, the Alfalfa Seed Commission, and the Oregon Grains Commission all said that they would like to have the option of offering a refund by rule. So with the proposed amendments that you're going to see, those three commissions would be able to adopt rules that would allow a refund of at least part of assessments for those growers that wanted that. If the commission adopts that refund, they would not have to comply with certain other parts of the bill that are being proposed. They would not have to have the oversight by the Director of Agriculture over promotional plans, and they would not have to have a public member. And that is true because if you're offering a refund, your assessments aren't mandatory anymore, and you apparently don't have the free speech problems. So they don't have to worry about free speech issues if they adopt a refund. So I think those are the main elements of the amendments and the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, I think you certainly hit on the main element that brings about 80% of the people that are sitting behind you here today. It has to do with that overbroad authority concept, I think. Maybe I'm just guessing, but are there questions that any of you have? I'm going to try to run a really fair hearing this morning where I go back and forth pro and con on the bill. I'm also going to try to make sure I take into account those people who've traveled over 100 miles to testify. But I'm going to ask you to try to limit the time of your testimony. Nobody should be speaking more than 3 minutes given the number of people that have signed up this morning. But I'm going to jump to the other side for a minute. Since several references have been made to the Farm Bureau and its amendments, I'm going to ask the panel from the Farm Bureau, there's four or five people, if they'll come next. And again, try not to be repetitive. Try to keep your statements very brief, okay? I could read the names, but I think you know who you are. Somebody want to start while the others are finding their way forward?
You want me to speak first?
Chair Shields, members of the committee, we thank you very much for the opportunity to address this issue today, and thank you for your patience. This issue was brought to us by County Farm Bureaus and discussed at our house.
Your name, please.
I'm sorry. I'm Barry Bashu. I'm president of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. My wife and I farm near Gresham and raise berries, nursery stock, flowers, and pumpkins. This issue was brought to us by our county farm bureaus and discussed at our annual House of Delegates, where our policy process is finalized and our policies are written. These policies are the voice and the process through which we do our litigation, our legislation processes. They are brought about by an open and frank discussion amongst our members and voted on at this House of Delegates by those people elected to do just that. They brought our concerns with the bill and indicated they were unable to satisfactorily address those concerns with their commissions. This appeared to be a result of the Department of Justice and Oregon Department of Agriculture's penchant for secrecy early in the process. I am pleased that the discussion has become much more frank and open for all of us. I would like to start by reiterating Farm Bureau's recognition of the value and importance of Oregon's 28 commodity commissions. We have always supported them and worked with them and their representatives in past legislative sessions to their benefit. Our concerns with Senate Bill 854 should in no way be interpreted as being directed at the commissions or their respective commissioners. Our concerns are in the nature of the bill and the implications it has for our grower members. They are centered on protecting the fundamental rights that growers have always had in the control of their commissions. Gene will outline some of our concerns with the bill later and perhaps some of the proposed amendments. To date, we have worked with commission representatives to make some positive changes to the original proposal. We will continue to try and work to address the remaining points of contention in the hope of resolving our differences. We understand the necessity for addressing the non-delegation issue and the freedom of speech issue arising from a Supreme Court decision. We do not share the need for the urgency expressed by the Department of Agriculture and Department of Justice. This bill is a radical proposal and a radical departure from the way commissions have operated so successfully in the past. A thorough discussion of its implications and time to reassess its impacts through some form of sunset seem prudent for all. The fundamental issue in this whole discussion is whether the control of commissions remains in the hands of those who pay the assessments or is transferred to the government as a result of this legislation. Do we trust government more than we trust the growers? Senate Bill 854 strips the growers of their rights to binding referendums or petitions. We would prefer that growers retain these rights. However, because of the complex constitutional issues surrounding the non-delegation issue, this straightforward option does not appear legally possible. We believe the only legal way to provide growers with the ultimate voice in their commissions is through the availability of a refund of their mandatory assessments, and we would like to see the bill amended to reflect this. This would provide for protection from freedom of speech litigation and removes the necessity for the most contentious of the increases in government control. We are aware that some commissions are concerned with the loss of budget dollars. I point to the numerous other states that have successful and effective commissions despite a refund option. The two are not mutually exclusive. I think everyone involved would rather see commissions continue to operate as they have been for so many years. That is no longer possible because of litigation. Commissions will change through no fault of their own. What the legislature must decide is the framework through which those changes will occur. Farm Bureau does not believe Senate Bill 854, as originally presented, provides that framework. Thank you very much for your time. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Jean Underhill Wilkinson. I'm an Associate Director for Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. I'm going to make my statements very brief so that you have the opportunity to hear from producers who have traveled a long way to this hearing. Shannon O'Fallon went through some of the amendments. We've received those this morning, and so obviously we haven't had time to review those. But the Farm Bureau membership talked to our leadership and discussed some reservations about the proposed legislation. Commission because of the additional government involvement in commissions that it would impose. So we looked at the legislation to determine whether we could minimize some of that and provide a comfort zone for people. We did come up with a list of about 20 items that we had concerns with and some proposed amendments. Obviously, the commission, we had good discussions with the commission representatives about that, and obviously at least some of those have been included, and we're pleased with that. We did make some suggestions that, in addition to the ones Shannon mentioned, and we'll see whether those changes were made, and those are some of the smaller issues. But Shannon covered some of the larger ones. I just wanted to make a couple statements about refund programs. Many commodity commissions, we are learning across the country, have refund programs. At least 16 of the wheat commissions across the country operate with those refund programs, and they suffer an average loss of about 9% from refunds. Kansas Wheat Commission, for example, we did hear a presentation at a Wheat League meeting from Kansas Wheat Commission leadership and staff person. They are very proud and thankful of their refund program that was established in 1957. They lose about 8.2% of their $3.7 million budget from refunds, and they consider it to be a positive program that encourages accountability and communication between the commission and the producers. The Wyoming Wheat Commission, however, is one that stands out as not operating so well. They lose about 30%, and they stand out as one that significantly loses more money through their refund program. 30% is significant. But there are some dynamics, really, when you look at that state and that refund program, and you can see why that is occurring. In Wyoming, I'm sure it's obvious that the wheat industry is a very small part of the Wyoming agriculture industry. The commission has about $50,000 budget, and they lose 30% of that. Right now, obviously, the producers are speaking as to what the commission has to offer the producer community through their determination of whether they pay the assessments or not. The commissioners right now are reviewing their programs and seeing if they can provide producers with a better service to encourage the payment of more of those assessments. So there are commissions across the country that do operate with refund programs, and they operate well. Most of the corn commissions across the country also operate through refund programs. As you heard from the panel of attorneys from the Department of Justice, litigation on this is continually evolving. And Senate Bill 854, as you heard, might provide us with legal certainty and might not. A good example of the additional questions that are now being answered in the court is seen in the Apple Commission litigation. I haven't seen those legal documents, but just from what I read in the paper, the judge has made at least a preliminary determination that the Apple Commission is operating unconstitutionally. But the attorneys are now asking some of the questions that we all want to know. Can we split off the commission's budget and consider the promotion budget issues separate from the research budget issues, which obviously don't fall under the free speech problems? And we'll see what happens with that. That's some of the uncertainty that we need to be developed in the court system so that we all can know exactly how commissions should be operating and how they can continue to operate legally. Time will only tell us whether we're making the right decisions today. So at a minimum, we need to have flexibility built into the system. So as this litigation evolves and we get better, more established guidelines as to how to operate, we'll be able to take that in and make the proper changes with our commission as time goes along. I'll conclude my testimony with that. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Beyer.
One question, Mr. Chair. Gene, you gave us a 9% average in the wheat, and then a range from 8.2 in Kansas to 30 in Wyoming that would be refunded. Are those the bookends of the... Is that the high and the low across the 16?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I don't know that for sure. It's not easy doing the research on these. The Wheat Commission is the one that did most of the research on the wheat commissions across the country, and they might know more information about that. But I would assume those are probably about the bookends. Most of the wheat commissions that I'm aware of lose an average of 8 or 9% of their money. Wyoming really sticks out as one that loses significantly more, and amongst the wheat commissions, the Wyoming is definitely the one that loses more significant funds.
Continue.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Hobson. I'm an attorney with Hobson and Bernasic. We represent the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation in this matter. We've been asked to look at the legislation before the committee today in the light of the litigation that is currently surrounding commodity programs throughout the United States. We've been asked to give advice as to the best approach to take. We are currently developing information on more than 20 cases that have been either heard or that are still pending in either the courts or before an administrative agency. The cases reveal some disturbing trends. Commodity programs are under heavy attack. Those who would destroy this way of doing business have begun to find chinks in the armor, and that has spurred something of a legal feeding frenzy. We know that much. What we do not know for sure is where to go from here. To say this area of the law is in a state of unrest is almost an understatement. We have state court decisions disagreeing with the U.S. Supreme Court over the interpretation of the U.S. Constitution. We have district court judges looking at the same commodity program and reaching different conclusions within months of each other. It's a free country. That's the sort of thing that will happen. In that setting, it is almost impossible to draw definite conclusions, or give definitive advice to the Oregon program. It appears that the energy and resources focused on destroying the national commodity system runs deep. It also appears that it will be years before we know what is survivable and what is not survivable in that storm. And so today we are hard-pressed to say what will and what will not provide Oregon commodity commissions with long-term stability and protection while preserving their historic producer orientation. Turning the assessment into a state tax appropriated by the legislature may not be enough to create a real safe harbor. We run a state court system, and the Department of Revenue has people dedicated to tax appeals because citizens can and will challenge even that. Given the money at stake and the resources that have been brought to bear, I believe we could expect the attacks to continue even in that setting. And so, what would I suggest? First, I would suggest we not run in a panic to what might at first blush appear to be a safe harbor, but which might turn out to be a trap. I would suggest that we, the people of Oregon, figure out what we would like to accomplish and set out to bring that into reality. I suggest we find a way to accomplish that while providing protection to the commissions and preserving the dignity and personal rights and freedoms of the producers. The meetings I have attended on this subject have shown to me that the 20-some different Oregon commodity commissions are each very different. They have different needs and different concerns. It will be difficult, if not impossible, to provide each with a careful consideration that is deserved in the pressure cooker of a legislative session facing many other big issues. If anything is done, it needs to be done with a built-in ability to revisit and fine-tune in the future. Hopefully, as these issues continue to develop, we will eventually see a clearer path, and Oregon will be able to develop a program that makes sense to it while protecting individual freedoms and liberties. Thank you.
You referred to the pressure cooker of the legislative session. How long has this conversation been going on now?
Which conversation, Mr. Chair?
Well, the whole conversation. I mean, this started before session, this discussion. Is that correct?
Senator Shields, members of the committee, yes, Farm Bureau first learned of this in end of October, early November, and we were unable to take that to our House of Delegates until December, which is, again, where we take our guidance from. And so that's the process for us has been geared up dramatically because we were unable to have input into this process prior to that. If I may, just quickly, when my testimony, I was supposed to present to you on the record a testimony here from the Oregon Alfalfa Commission. The gentleman responsible's father was ill and faxed this over to us, so I was unable to do that.
We'll make sure that we get a hold of that. I just wanted to make the point that it shouldn't be laid totally on the shoulders of the legislature at this point. This is an issue that started before, and we're not going to feel the sense of a pressure cooker. We want to arrive at something that's fair. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe, you said that there are state courts who disagreement with the Supreme Court on this issue, and I know there's, you know, dozens of cases around. Could you, not now, but provide us with some of the legal analysis of the different courts, how they've gone on this issue?
Chair, Senator Beyer, I'd be very happy to do that. We're still in the process of bringing that information together, but I'd be very happy to provide that information to the committee.
Thank you. That would be helpful.
Yes.
Sure. You can either switch seats or you can just, maybe some of you would just rather get out of these.
Before he leaves, Joe?
We never want a lawyer to get away too fast in this case.
No, don't put words in my mouth. Could you speak directly to any disagreement you might have with the Assistant Attorney General's view of the court overview that they gave?
You know, the reality is I think there's very little disagreement between us on the legal issues.
Okay.
I can't think of an example, you know, of strong disagreement between us.
Thank you. I just want to get that on the record. Analysis.
Go ahead. Joe, did you want to make another comment?
Gene just asked me to comment on, I think there have been some rumors floating around with respect to what would happen to the commissions if the legislation that has been proposed does not pass. And again, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cochran, I don't believe there's significant disagreement between myself and the Assistant Attorney General that I've talked to about this. I believe it's generally understood that it's up in the air. There isn't any way to predict exactly what will happen, but it could be crafted in such a way that protection is there and it's provided to the commissions on a continuing basis, and as we work out the details and try to figure out what would be the best way to go for the commissions and for the state of Oregon for the future.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
Chairman Shields, Senators, my name is Charles Bartle. I'm first vice president of Oregon Farm Bureau. I live in Malheur County, about 15 miles south of Nissa, where I'm a partner in a family farm. We grow potatoes, onions, sugar beets, beans and peas for seed, and wheat. Our farm currently pays assessments to two commodity commissions. We have continued to be supportive of these commissions and their positive contributions to our industry. Over the years, commodity commissions, in partnership with Oregon Department of Agriculture, have done a great deal to help agriculture in the research, education, and marketing arenas. The threat of litigation and the delegation of power issues driving this legislation are of concern. The seemingly obvious solution to these concerns is refund programs allowing those who pay some say, a founding principle of this nation. It is beyond me that an industry that prides itself in independence and accountability can support legislation that removes grower input while increasing government control and regulation. I hesitate to use personal information, but I feel the following facts make some good points. The past season, assessments and dues for 12 association, grower group, and commissions were deducted from our payment before we received the check. 10 of them voluntary, 2 of them mandatory, for a total of a little over $4,800, two-thirds of which is to voluntary organizations. 10 of the 12 organizations are voluntary, and yet we continue to pay assessments to reap the benefits of the value they provide us with. One of those voluntary organizations has a 99% voluntary membership level. This issue is not about the money or defunding the commissions. Growers will continue to support the commissions and other groups that are responsive and valuable to their operations. Thus, refundability is not a recipe for the end of commissions or their ability to function. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next witness.
Thank you, Chair Shields and Senators. My name is Marie Gadotti, and I'm the third vice president of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. My husband and I have been farming for over 30 years. We grow wheat, clover seed, grass seed, cattle, and silage corn. We currently pay into 4 commissions. As of today, none of these commissions have come to us and asked our opinion. in saying that, the Wheat League has held a workshop in February and asked for growers to come. Oregon Farm Bureau is involved in this issue because of our grassroots mandated us to do so at our annual convention in December. Farm Bureau believes commissions are valuable to the industry and to the growers. This bill will take away all the growers' rights of petitions, referendums, and voting for our commissioners. It will make commodity commission government agencies. Farm Bureau believes commissions were formed by the growers and were intended to be ran by them. It is Oregon Farm Bureau's opinion that a full refund available to all growers upon request will not only deal with a free speech issue, but it will, in the end, be the ultimate vote by the producers. This refund should be seen in a positive way to assure the commissions are held accountable. We believe in grower-run commissions, not government ones. While delving into the issue, we found out this bill not only adds language that deals with free speech and delegation issues, but puts way more government controls on growers than was ever intended by the original founders of the commissions themselves. You should not be putting undue burdens on our growers, such as heavier fines of up to $5,000 or adding a criminal penalty such as a Class A misdemeanor that is punishable for up to a year in prison. A grower should not have to pay for audits sought by a commission that is greater than the assessment they may owe. Commissions should not be allowed to regulate pesticide use, only assist in getting them registered. Marketing orders are not a role of the commission and should be taken out of this bill. I urge you to support Oregon Farm Bureau's position on Senate Bill 854 and keep commissions in the hands of the growers, not the government. Thank you.
Questions? Senator Porter.
Well, we have the folks up here. Would you address one of the issues that the proponents of the bill have made, and that is that in at least the area of research, there are some multi-year research grants, and the voluntary nature of the assessments could impact that?
You want to
address it? It sounds mean. Okay. From a grower perspective, we budget every year, and we have to do the very same thing as the commissions do, and we have those projects going on our own farm, and hopefully we budget those in a manner of you're taking your risk in your budget. I do understand the difficulty they will face, but I guess from a grower's perspective, the choice between a government-ran commission and a grower-ran commission, I think that 10% avenue they could put right in their budget and figure out how to make those research projects go forth.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
So put another way, would you sacrifice the research projects in order to have the voluntary assessment?
I really personally don't feel you have to do that. I don't think we have to sacrifice our research to keep these commissions under grower control. I think that it's like any other budget process. You put your priority up at research and work down from there to make sure that is funded first. That would be my answer.
Okay. Well, I guess, I mean, it's one thing to say that you think they can continue it. It's another thing to actually say that you would take one over the other. I mean, if you're prudent, farmer, you're probably, not going to make, assessments into the future that you can't cover.
No, we have to budget.
Yeah.
The best we can.
Thanks.
Chair Shields?
Yes.
I would address that with your...
Very quickly.
Chair Shields, Senator Corcoran, I think the thing to look at is the fact that a lot of other states do exactly that. What they have done is decided that there will be some refundability. It ranges anywhere from 1.5% to, as you heard this morning, as high as 30%. Most of those commissions take that into account when they do their budgeting, and it does not become as big an issue as many of us are trying to preclude that it will.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. What I have in front of me looks more and more like a witness list that's been put together by, on the one hand, the Farm Bureau, and on the other hand, the commissions. And so I'm going to jump back and forth between those.
Now, an economist on the one hand, on the other.
Katie Koba and Chuck Craig are listed next. Do you want to make a few comments? Okay, very briefly. We know that you come from the department, of course, and you may want to address some of the things that have already been raised. But after that, I'm going to try to clearly go back and forth between and move from the kind of panels to more witnesses hearing from growers and farmers on both sides of the issue. Go ahead, Katie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Katie Koba, Director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I'm testifying today to join with Oregon's Commodity Commissions in their support of Senate Bill 854. Because of recent litigation and advice you heard earlier from the Attorney General and the conversation you just had with the representatives from the Farm Bureau, we believe this legislation is necessary and our best alternative to ensure the future viability of Oregon's Commodity Commission system. This grower-funded self-help system generates multiple benefits for Oregon and our agricultural economy through the efficient delivery of research, education, and promotional programs. I have just returned with the governor from a trade mission to China, where we witnessed firsthand the accomplishments of Oregon's grass seed commissions in developing this extraordinary international marketing opportunity. Commissions rely on countless volunteer hours from nearly 200 commissioners. Drawn from the leadership ranks from within their sector, they serve from every corner of the state and truly reflect the sense of their industry. That is why we rely on their input. They are the pulse of Oregon agriculture, and what they say should and does matter to all of us. Last September, commission chairs and administrators met with the Oregon Attorney General's office and my predecessor to discuss the issues related to the collection of mandatory assessments for the use of generic promotion and marketing programs. At this meeting, it was unanimously decided to move forward with a legislative fix. The agreed-upon approach would address the constitutional concerns with current enabling statutes. The bill you see today is the result of hundreds of hours of work among the commissions, their lobbyists, administrators, the Attorney General, and Legislative Council. Is it perfect? No. But it does represent a consensus among the commissions to provide the legal framework to continue the operation of Oregon's commodity commissions. And it is the commissioners, the people on the front lines, that have the most to lose and the most to gain with the outcome of this legislation, since they are legally responsible for the conduct of their respective commissions. A few specific observations with respect to this legislation. First of all, nothing in this legislation radically changes the relationship between the Oregon Department of Agriculture and the way Oregon's commissions operate. We will still provide program oversight that we currently provide to ensure that the interests of the producers that pay the assessments are protected. Secondly, commissions are today and always have been considered to be special purpose state agencies. As such, they follow state agency rules with respect to financial accounting, contracting, hiring practices, and ethics rules. This legislation does not change this framework. The Department of Agriculture's oversight of commission speech, as it is now described in the bill, can be conducted within the current oversight responsibilities and will not result in additional program costs to the commissions. Fourth, in the big picture, the appointment of commission members by the Director of Agriculture will not meaningfully take away choice from the producer. Currently, the Director of Agriculture appoints the commissioners of 22 of the 28 commissions. Senate Bill 854 also requires the director to consider recommendations of producers in making these appointments. Fifth, we do have serious concerns about incorporating a mandatory refundability provision in the bill. In conclusion, I would like to thank all of Oregon's commissioners for the hard work they have done on behalf of Oregon agriculture. All of us are proud of the work that the commissions do, and it's critical that this legislation be passed this session to ensure the continued success of Oregon's commodity commissions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Katie. Chuck, did you have a few words to add?
Mr. Chair, if I might, I might toss in a few comments. For the record, I'm Chuck Craig, Deputy Director for Department of Agriculture. There was some discussion about the impact of refundability on commission budgets in other parts of the country, and it seems as though most of those examples are referenced to very large-scale commodities like wheat, corn, etc., where there are a lot of producers and high volume. Mr. Chair, I would just underscore the fact that Oregon has over 200 commodities. In many cases, there are small numbers of commodity producers that have banded together in order to have the resources available to conduct a marketing program. And I don't think that our situation is comparable to the bulk commodities grown in the Midwest. The second point that I would bring up is the issue of pesticide regulation was raised. The bill does not propose for the commissions to regulate pesticides. It allows the commissions to participate in state and federal hearings concerning pesticides. And, Mr. Chair, that's largely a result of the minor crop nature of Oregon. Getting and retaining registration for pesticides to be used on the crops in Oregon is a big effort. There's a constant threat of minor crop producers losing the use of pesticides that are necessary for economic production of their crop. And in fact, the whole phase out of fuel burning that took place depends on the ability to retain the use of critical pesticides for accomplishing what fuel burning used to do. So that's the purpose of that, Mr. Chair. It's not for the commissions to regulate pesticides.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. He just answered the one question I had, and I just wanted to make sure that because I believe we have a preemption law in Oregon, only the State Department of Ag can regulate the use of pesticides. I don't think commissions will get that authority. So thanks, Chuck, for that.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I just might make a final comment. The Department of Agriculture values the relationship that it has with commodity commissions. And obviously our mission in life is to ensure the economic viability of the agricultural industry in this state. We are in no way interested in setting up any kind of legal framework that takes control away from growers. We will continue to value our partnership with the commodity commissions and look forward to working with all the interests that are here in this room today to set up a legal framework that allows the commodity commissions to succeed. I think that is the ultimate reason why we are here today.
I'm glad you made that statement, Katie. You know, we've heard the issue of who controls government or the grower raised this morning. And, you know, I'm caught in the middle. I don't have a one side or another. I just want to arrive at a safe place for everybody. Now, what happens if we aren't able to pass a bill at this point, in your opinion? I've heard some other opinions this morning on that, just very briefly.
Mr. Chairman, obviously I'm not an attorney, and I think what you've heard this morning is the litigation is so new and there are so many cases taking place in a variety of court settings around the country. I think it would be impossible to predict what would happen if this legislation did not pass today. However, I am extremely concerned that we could put the commissions in the place of not being able to operate and not being able to get the legislature back here quickly enough to do something in order to allow them to continue to operate. So I would certainly hope that we could come to a place during this legislative session where we can pass a bill that we think is the best way to allow the commodity commissions to continue to operate. And then during the course of the interim, we're going to have to continue to monitor all of the court cases and monitor how well this new legislation, if passed, works here in Oregon, and be prepared to come back to the next session and propose any kinds of tweaks to the legislation if that needs to happen. And the Oregon Department of Agriculture would pledge to work with the grower community, with our commodity commissions, and with the various interest groups to do that.
just for the record, what happens if, quote-unquote, to use your words, the commissions can't operate? What's that worst-case scenario look like?
Mr. Chairman,
I'm just after a few specifics on the record.
Well, I think the impact on Oregon agriculture in this state could be very significant. The commodity commissions put a lot of money into research that is matched with other dollars in our university system. They put a lot of money into promotion that is oftentimes as well matched with additional dollars. And all of this ultimately affects the economic health of the industry. These are dollars that are driven by producers and put into programs where producers feel they have the most need. And I just have serious concerns about the ability to lose that infrastructure even in the short term, considering where Oregon agriculture is today, the competition that we're facing in the global marketplace, and the need to continue to invest in research and marketing and promotion in order to make this industry successful in Oregon.
Okay. Thank you very much. I want to hurry on now. The Oregon Wheat League has some folks that have come from over 100 miles. Carl Spence? Spruce? Come on, give me a chance. Very, okay. And Ken?
Grebe, I think.
Grebe?
Oh, we got...
Hey, one out of two. Maybe one of you writes better than the other. I'm not sure. You say you came over 100 miles. Where'd you come from?
From Merrill, Oregon. And he's from...
That's a little further than 100.
Mm-hmm. I'm from Lexington. Good morning.
Kentucky? No.
Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Ken Grebe, and I'm president of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. I reside in Marl County, and I'm a full-time wheat producer. I provide the following remarks in support of the proposed amendment to Senate Bill 854, which provides for the maintenance of the current wheat statute, ORS 578. The wheat industry is proud of the history and tradition created by the establishment of the Oregon Wheat Commission and supports the continuation of the Oregon Wheat Commission statute, ORS Chapter 578, for the following reasons. The Oregon Wheat Commission was the first commodity commission in Oregon, established by the legislature in 1947. The Oregon Wheat Commission funds research, market development, and educational activities with checkoff dollars paid by the grower at the first point of sale. These are grower dollars and should be controlled by the growers who pay the checkoff. The wheat grown in Oregon is predominantly destined for export markets, and ORS Chapter 578 specifically charges the Oregon Wheat Commission with the development of foreign markets. Wheat is a bulk commodity, and the Oregon Wheat Commission does not engage in promotional activity or branding campaigns targeted at consumers. The wheat industry has enjoyed 56 years of self-governance with limited oversight by the Department of Agriculture other than the review of budgets and contracts. Increased oversight of this commodity is not necessary and will shift already constrained resources away from projects such as education, market development, and research to oversight activities conducted by the ODA. The Oregon Wheat Growers League supports the maintenance of ORS Chapter 578 with a provision for refundability as an amendment to Senate Bill 854 for the following reasons. Given the timing of this legislation change, prior to knowing the final outcome of pending legal cases in other states, the OWGL Board of Directors understands a refund provision is the only acceptable option at this time. A refund program would eliminate the government speech issue, which is the basis for legal challenges in other states, and a refund program would allow wheat producers to remain in control of the funds paid to the Wheat Commission. For the record, please allow me to state it is not the intention of the Oregon Wheat Growers League to support a restructuring that would dismantle the Oregon Wheat Commission. However, given the options presented by the Department of Justice, the growers are faced with no choice but to speak in favor of refunding the assessment to the growers who have paid it in versus increased oversight by the Department of Ag. It is the opinion of the growers the role of the Department of Agriculture should be to assist in building markets, both domestic and foreign, for all commodities grown in Oregon, not to serve as a regulator. The Oregon wheat industry has enjoyed a very strong working relationship with the Department of Ag and looks forward to building on that foundation. Let us not allow the issue before us today to draw battle lines between the Department of Agriculture and the commodity groups they are directed to enhance. The agricultural community in Oregon is desirous of responding to the challenge presented by the Department of Justice to embrace this legislation in a positive and proactive manner. However, the actions requested by the Department of Justice through this proposed legislative change should not, in the end, be more detrimental than beneficial and should not result in more harm than good. Thank you.
Thank you. Carl, when you get into your testimony, try to hit points that haven't already been made by Ken.
Sure. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Shields and other senators. My name is Carl Sorance. I'm a vice president of the Oregon Wheat Growers League, and I reside in Merrill, Oregon, and I'm a full-time wheat and barley producer, so I pay assessments to both the Wheat Commission and Grains Commission. I'd just like to clarify the Wheat Growers League is the grower membership organization of the wheat industry in Oregon, and we receive some funding from the Oregon Wheat Commission and also dues. We have a dues structure for members, and there's 25 people on our board and representing various wheat counties and various committee heads. I myself am proud of the history of the wheat industry, and I'd like to emphasize the fact we're not against the bill 854. We feel the wheat can stand on its own. It has the ability to stand on its own with our own enabling statute, since we're one of the lucky people. The non-delegation issue doesn't affect us as it does some of the other commissions, the way of the commissioners are appointed and brought into being. The Wheat Growers League, with a unanimous decision by our board, was in favor of a refundability amendment to our Chapter 578. We feel that this keeps the growers more in. Have a say in what the dollars are spent. We know that there's quite a bit of research and educational efforts, and the Wheat Commission gives us funds to take part in some of these things. I feel it's unfortunate during these times that the state is facing a budgetary crisis. The commodity organizations are being threatened with a cease and desist orders. I just the way this whole issue came down, it's created a lot of yanks between various people in our organization, and we've been having some trouble dealing with that. We've been throwing some mortar shells at each other in our own industry, and we'd sure like to resolve this in a peaceful manner. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you
Thank you.
Coming and sharing with us today. Right now I'm going to ask John McCauley if he'll jump up here while others come to the desk, and you can begin. I'm wanting John Rossner, Ralph Fisher, and George Pugh to each come forward. And the one of you that can't sit down up here, sit right where John was, and he'll get his seat back in a minute.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John McCauley, here representing the commodity commissions and primarily the Oregon Dairy Products Commission. That's kind of served as the focal point for the commissions on this legislation. I know you have a lot of people who are ready to testify, and you need to hear from them more than you do me, but I just want to make a couple of points. One, you see the requesters of the bill, and this is just a for-the-record statement, that could imply that all 28 of the commodity commissions requested this bill. But I need to make sure the record shows that the Oregon Beef Council is not included in that. Their federal act under which they operate, that governs their activities, precludes them from being involved in legislative activities. So while they endorse the contents of the bill, they cannot be listed as a requester or participate in the lobbying effort to pass the bill. So just to clarify that for the record. I also have submitted with my testimony or separately a statement from Mr. Ken Bailey of Orchard View Farms in the Dalles. He asked that I share an email he sent to me with the committee, and that is included. I would also refer to my testimony and a couple of things I've attached to it that may be of interest to the committee. One is a comparison of this legislation with where the commissions are now. I think it will show the changes that are being proposed in the context of what we're trying to accomplish here. And thirdly, attached to that is a list of all 28 commodity commissions along with their budgets and the research, the marketing promotion efforts that they conduct. And I think just to conclude this, it speaks to the idea of refundability because you've heard that refundability is something that is seen by some as being a solution to the problems that are seen with the bill relative to increased government oversight. But I think it's important to note that we have 28 different commodity commissions in the state. We heard about the refundability programs in Kansas and Wyoming. My guess is that Kansas and Wyoming don't have seafood commodity commissions. We have a much different agriculture in this state and on the West Coast compared to other states. And I think it's with that in mind that we've got to retain as much flexibility as possible in allowing the diverse commodity commissions in this state to operate as best they can. I would also emphasize that the commissions will continue to be grower-controlled. The implication is that the growers would not control commissions were this legislation to pass. It's important to note that just as now, growers will constitute the vast majority of the members of a commission. I grew up in Malin, Oregon, a wonderful potato country, best potatoes grown in the world.
Totally.
Yeah, right now they are.
Objective for a second.
And I know.
Say that.
Edwin Stastny, a neighbor of ours, was on the potato commission. And as a grower, producer who pays the assessments, when he was down at Dee's Cafe in the morning, he was hearing from all of his neighbors about things going on with the commission along with a lot of other things. But I say that just to indicate that growers are not insulated from everything else that's going on in their commodity. They are constantly taking input. So growers will continue to serve that role, a very vital role, in the operations of the commission. Mr. Chairman, we appreciate everything this committee has done, all of the information that you've been accumulating. Especially want to thank Senator Beyer for his work in trying to help us resolve these issues. As you see in the Dash 2 amendments, we have addressed many of the concerns that you have heard today. We still are dealing with the refund issue, and I think we will continue to work on that and hopefully reach a resolution soon.
Thank you. Go ahead. Identify yourself.
I'm John Rossner. Good morning, Senator Shields, Senator Fisher, Senator Beyer, and Senator Cochran. My wife and I are farmers with a farm located southwest of McMinnville, Oregon. We produce grass seed, legume seeds, and grain. I am a member of Oregon Farm Bureau, Oregon Seed Growers League, and the Oregon Wheat League. In the past, I've served as president of Oregon Farm Bureau and of the Oregon Seed Growers League. Today, I'm speaking as a farmer and as a member of the Oregon Clover Commission and not as a representative in the other organizations that I mentioned. We do pay fees to the following commissions: Orchard Grass, fescue, clover, wheat, and in the past we paid fees to the Ryegrass Commission and the Grains Commission. We're not growing those two commodities at the present time. I support Senate Bill 854 as I strongly believe that the various commodity commissions have benefited us as farmers and well as other farmers in Oregon. For example, beginning in the 1950s, the Wheat Commission developed new markets in Asia for the soft white wheat we grow in Oregon. Over the years, it has resulted in a steady market. In following the Portland, Oregon wheat prices versus the Chicago Board of Trade, the Portland wheat price, with few exceptions, has always been higher than the Chicago price. That difference has put more dollars in Oregon wheat farmers' pockets than our colleagues growing wheat in other areas of the United States because of the work of one particular commission. During the time that I've served on the Oregon Clover Commission, the commission has funded research on new ways and inputs to improve production of clover seeds, funded and staffed promotional booths at trade shows for farmers to tell them of the value of planting Oregon-grown red clover and Oregon clover seeds. funded and staff from, worked with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, Oregon State University Seed Lab, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture on the issue of small brome rape, a parasitic plant that has been found in some red clover fields. Oregon was under a threat of a quarantine, but through the combined work of the Clover Commission and the groups mentioned, we took the severity out of that clover, out of that quarantine. Through more work with the Oregon Seed Lab and handlers who cleaned the seed, it was found that through the cleaning process, the seed of small brome rape was removed. Although red clover seed is still tested for small brome rape, this work removed a barrier to the sales of Oregon-grown red clover seed. I feel that when I choose to grow a crop that has a commodity commission, I am joining a team made up of my colleagues producing the commodity. All of us on the team are contributing to a commission to promote our commodity, to help and fund research, and to develop other means that helps us beneficially and economically. All members of the team have a voice in helping the commission set programs, projects, and other priorities by attending attending commission meetings. The commission meetings are open to any producer who wishes to attend and provide input. A number of commissions hold general meetings with education and informal programs in which producers have an opportunity to put forward their views. Some are advocating a refund program. But what happens to a basketball team if one of the players decides to go home after the second quarter? What happens if another player says he only wants to shoot three-point shots, or another player says that he will only run half the court? There's not much of a basketball team, and nobody gains in that scenario. The producers through the Commodity Commission are a team working towards a beneficial goal for all. If some of the team members do not want to participate, then the whole team suffers. That means all of us. I support Senate Bill 854 with the amendments that have been proposed, the -2 amendments, and I encourage you to support the bill also. Thank you. If you have any questions, I will answer them.
Questions? Let's move on to the next one.
Senator Shields, my name is Ralph Fisher. I've been involved in commodity commissions since about 1978, starting with the Highland Bentgrass Commission, and now I'm chairman of the Fine Fescue Commission. I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 854, and I think we're at the time of the hearings when, we're reiterating a lot of stuff, but I think there's a couple points that I hope you picked up on that are controversial. Number one is the government oversight, and number two is the refundability. I think when we look at it, when I look at my farming operation, and I look at the number of segments that we've already entrusted into oversight by the Department of Agriculture, these people are our friends, and we should not be afraid of them for oversight into the commodity commissions. They already have somewhat oversight, and granting more oversight as far as appointing commissioners is not going to be a big change, and so we need to trust, and we as an agricultural industry need to trust the Department of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture has a Board of Agriculture that is made up of grower-producers, and we have access to them, and so I guess that is one thing as far as oversight is. We as agriculture do not need to fear the Department of Agriculture. The second thing is the refundability, and I think that issue has been brought up numerous times. And I think the point is also brought up that if you look at what John McCauley put forward, there are six commodity commissions that have budgets over or less than $50,000. And I think the diversity and the depth of the minor crops that are in these commodity commissions, refundability would be devastating to these. I checked and I raised a commodity for one of the smaller commodities, and I checked, and last year I paid $25.89 to one of these commodities. As John Rossner spoke, we're a team, and do I ask for a refund of $25.89? I don't think so. And look at the cost of the commission that if we do that. I think also on a lot of these commodity commission programs that we do have, especially research, we're matched by federal dollars and other university dollars. And I think the question was asked is if this bill fails to go through, what effect will it have on agriculture? And it will be devastating because of the matching dollars. I don't think, I look at Oregon State's research programs, they're already hit. If the commissions can't fund them, I don't expect us to come to the legislature and ask them to make the money up, because I think we know that there's no money here. I think the other issue that I'd like to comment on is many of us, there's the issue, I think, of there's the growers and then there's the grower commissioners, and we're on the front lines. We're the ones that are liable And I know, I think that if there was a lawsuit and it named us, that the industry would support us as growers and pay, help us pay, but we're the ultimate ones that are on the front lines. And you know, the dollar amount doesn't necessarily bother me as much as the time commitment that if a commodity commission was sued to go through the process. And lastly, I think you need to remember that some of us grower commissioners have been meeting with the Department of Justice for a couple of years on this issue. A lot of us that have met have been Farm Bureau members, so Farm Bureau has been involved. So, are there any questions? Thank you.
Questions? Let's go with George.
Chairman Shields, committee members, my name is George Few. I live in Farm near Shedd, Oregon, Hunton County. I have grown up with the commission system. My father helped start the Ryegrass Commission in the early 60s. Myself, I've spent five terms on two different commissions. That's a quarter of my lifetime. I currently pay into four separate commodity commissions, and I really respect and appreciate what they have done for the agricultural industry here in Oregon. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 854 and its amendments. My two principal concerns about not having this legislation is, one, in the refundability. I am currently the chair of the Oregon Seed Council's Market Access Committee. That committee is funded by a match of seed money from the commission's match to federal USDA market access funds. Without the predictability of that match, we could not put forward proposals and expect to continue a plan of operation. I believe you folks as legislators realize what unpredictable funds can do to a business enterprise such as the government of the state of Oregon. So I would hate to see the commissions put in that kind of jeopardy. The other issue that I'm concerned about is, as a past commissioner, I am really concerned, as is Ralph Fisher, on the liability that would come to the existing commissioners if they were brought into a lawsuit. And anything we can do to smooth that over, to make that go away, I think is very important. The continuation of the commissions is essential, I think, to the health and well-being of the agricultural industry in the state, and I appreciate your efforts in continuing that viability. Thank you.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. I think George is being a little bit modest here. He didn't mention you are on the Board of Ag also, right?
I'm very fortunate to be there, yes. Thank you.
I guess I'd ask this question of any of the three of you. It sounds like you're all part of the Farm Bureau. Where you said you were formerly a president of the Farm Bureau. Obviously, you folks have ended up at a different position on the refundability issue. How do you... reconcile that to a degree?
Let's go back to the team concept a little bit. I think anybody who is a farmer needs to belong to a general farm organization as well as specific farm organizations that may represent their commodity in an overall context. Within organizations, there can be differences of opinion. The House of Delegates of Oregon Farm Bureau took a particular stance. I was a delegate at the House of Delegates, and I came out on the losing end. However, I am here as a farmer and as a commission member saying that I disagree with Farm Bureau. That's not taking anything away from them. I will continue to be a Farm Bureau member. I will continue to support Farm Bureau because of what they are doing for the agricultural community and the good that I see coming out of it. We just have a little difference here on the refundability issue, and I personally feel that the refundability issue can raise more problems than what it will solve in what the Farm Bureau stance is taking on this. It might be somewhat like a family squabble. We're still family, but we have a difference of opinion on a particular issue.
With six siblings, I understand what family squabble is. Let's move on then. I'm going to jump to the other page to Farm Bureau folks. It looks like Dan and Don Anderson and Sharon Waterman. I don't care who goes first, Dan or Don. We're just trying to move it on. Is Sharon here?
Sharon's not here.
Okay. Lynn Long, is that the guy sitting there? Okay. Somebody begin, whoever wants.
My name's Don Anderson. I'm from Sowies Island. I have cattle and some wheat and spring grains. I'm here in support of the position of Farm Bureau, which I think is on the right track. We have a great opportunity to do something with the commissions. I'm not some commissions, I believe, do a good job, and on some of them, I don't. I think it is important that all commissions are funded. I do believe that. I think also it's important that if you're not happy with a commission, that you get your money back. That makes them accountable. And I think that's very important. I don't want to see, I'd like to see less government involvement. I think this should be a producer-oriented program, producers' goals, and I think that's what's needed. As to another point is the penalties. If it is voluntary, you don't need penalties for not contributing to the funds. The other thing that amazes me is in this bill is that you want somebody from the public to be on the board. Far as I can know, we probably in the United States have the smartest consumers in the world, and I would leave it up to the consumer to figure this out. And in closing, I think again, refund should be mandatory. I think supporting the commission should be mandatory also, but then it leaves it up to the producer to decide. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Edmund Dyke, and I farm in Washington County near Hillsborough since 1954, and I supported and pay into four commissions at this time. I also used to pay into the Dairy Commission for 35 years. I have been on the Oregon Farm Bureau Board of Directors through four presidents, including John and the current Barry Beshue. I've been there for over 10 years. I don't always agree with everything. It's like John says, you have to give and take, but it's a team effort. But I have several concerns about the bill as written, but now that I heard of some of the amendments this morning, it is becoming more palatable. And I think with a little more tweaking, we can make it acceptable. I was in favor of a refund if we don't get a vote. That is our vote. And there are some commissions who are not accountable to their growers. And I will cite a prime example. When the ABT scandal hit, I'm a clover seed grower and a grass seed grower. The commissions never lifted a finger to help us get some justice out of that fiasco. Farm Bureau stepped in, and it wasn't part of their budget, but they managed to carry the ball, paid the attorney fees, and got a fairly sizable amount of refund. Last I heard it was 28% or 28 cents on the dollar, and they're hoping for more. Why wasn't the commissioners in there with some of that money that belonged to the people who paid it to help them recover their losses? I understand they put about $50,000 into the process of forming Senate Bill 854. If they got money to support that, they should have had money to support their growers in recovering their losses. And that's where the failure to be responsive to the growers comes in. Not all commissions are responsive, and you need something to hold them accountable. As far as the budgetary issue you were talking about a while ago, if the price of a commodity gets so low that they no longer grow the commodity, they've lost the commission fee. So suddenly they're going to have to make some adjustments of how they're going to make ends meet. That's just a fact of life. Just like if you grow a crop and it isn't worth anything, you had plans, you were going to buy a new tractor with that. Well, you didn't get the money, so you don't do it. So, if a refund costs them 10%, and it may not cost 10% if it's doing a good job. I've never considered asking for any money back from any organization I belong to, even though sometimes I disagree with them. And I would just question how much money honest people would ask to be returned in commission fees because they just want the money. I think the only reason people ask for refunds is because they're not happy with how their money is being used. And so if we can make the commissions accountable, I don't think they have a real worry. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dan Anderson. I reside in northern Malheur County. Like Charlie Barlow, I'm probably one of the farthest people away that came today. The main reason I came today is to support what Farm Bureau is doing. I live on a cow-calf operation as well as a haying operation. I farm with my family, my brother, and I came here because I felt that this was an issue that we needed to stand together with and come to it from this direction. As being a Farm Bureau member, I represent our county as our county board chairman. We have over 325 members that are voting. So therefore, I am one part of the State Farm Bureau. We met last year in December at our board of, or our House of Delegation to discuss many issues, and one of those was the Commodities Commission. I felt we had a lengthy and a long discussion. There was pros and cons, and the way our policy came out that we are supporting this Farm Bureau's view of the way this legislation is coming out. Farm Bureau is a grassroots organization. It comes from the bottom up. Our staff and our board of directors, they answer to us, and therefore they are doing the direction of what we as members of Farm Bureau are asking them to do. And therefore I'm proud of what they're doing. One thing that did come up in our discussions today is that many of the commissions, the way they receive their funds is a percentage of the commodity price that they are the commissioners for, and so therefore they have to budget every year and deal with budgets that when commodity prices rise and lower, their budgets go up and down. The same way with these fees. If a grower wants to opt out and wants his fees back, then there, that also is something that can be budgeted in as far as what the amount of money that they're going to have to deal with. And like Edmund said, if the price of a commodity bottoms out, there will be no dollars for that commission to operate with. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you. Further questions? If you folks step back, I'll ask back on the other side of the ledger, Tony and Deanne Olmstead, Nels Iverson, Ed and Macy, they're all potato producers. They'd come forward.
The Irish like these folks.
Your comments can all be addressed to Senator Corcoran, I guess.
The resident Irishman, very glad you're growing potatoes.
I'm Nels Iverson. I come from a family farm in the Willamette Valley here, and we farm from Jefferson to the Monitor Canby area. We raise a diversity of crops from tulips to potatoes to wheat and other things. We have a kind of a division in our house. I've got a brother who's a county president of Farm Bureau. We have this kind of discussion in our business meetings, so I'm quite aware of the controversy between the commissions and the Farm Bureau because we have them in our family meetings. I think in general that we agree on the need for commodity commissions. Where we disagree on is how best can we accomplish what the commodity commissions already have done. While commodity commissions have been around for over 50 years, the changes are needed to keep these organizations viable. In discussions with the potato industry, it was agreed that They did not necessarily like the prospect of more oversight, public members, or other requirements, but we feel we are worthwhile changes, if necessary, to keep the commissions legally functioning. Also, it was agreed that that review of marketing plans by ODA or even public member input could actually be beneficial in some cases. Therefore, the Oregon Potato Commission members agreed to support this bill. I have served on the Potato Commission. This is my second time around. I've served on that for now about 12 years. I've also served on the Processed Vegetable Commission. We as a business support about six or seven commissions. There's another three or four commissions that we've paid assessments to at various points in our business. A refund provision that has been discussed. There are problems with using a refund provision in that it makes budgeting unpredictable and programs become more vulnerable to a year-to-year basis. Many of the commodity commissions have a average that we base our budgets on, like the production over the last 3 to 5 years. And so we already have variability in our budgeting, estimating how much the growers are going to produce or plant that current year. This would just compound the effort in trying to make an accurate budget. The U.S. Potato Board is successful in the request of USDA to remove a refund provision many years ago. This has meant a much better program for the potato industry on a national level. It also eliminated the free ridership of those who get benefits from the program but end up not paying the assessment. All growers benefit by commission activity, whether it be research, market development, or promotions. Commissions are an important part of providing agriculture research at this time of limited funding at state universities. One of the biggest programs of the Oregon Potato Commission involves research committee. Local research committee meet around the state annually to list priorities. Then the full Oregon Potato Commission Research Committee meets and finalizes major issues needing attention. These growers then review the proposals and fund many extension and experiment station projects through Oregon State University. The funding for the coming fiscal year will amount to over $150,000. At a time when plant pathologists, entomologists, plant breeders, and extension agents vitally need these resources to continue to support agricultural production in Oregon. Two specific examples of extension that is supported, green peach aphid and late bright forecasting, assist in integrated pest management systems and reduce pesticide use. Another item to consider is work on a regional basis. For example, the Northwest Potato Variety Development Committee includes representatives from the Oregon Potato Commission, the Idaho Potato Commission, and the Washington State Potato Commission. Collectively, we go to the Washington, D.C. each year and work to secure more than $600,000 from the Cooperative State Research, Education, and Extension Service and ARS within the USDA for Oregon State University, Idaho, and Washington for variety development. The Oregon Potato Commission also provides funding to this program and is the only body that can represent the Oregon potato industry to procure these federal funds for agriculture in the state. It's developed new varieties such as Ranger and Umatilla, which has meant millions of dollars to the growers. A recent University of Idaho study has shown that for every dollar that is invested in the breeding program, there's between $36 and $39 returned back to the potato industry. In market access issues, there was a Korean trade team that came to Klamath Basin in March, and the Oregon Potato Commission helped to open this new market, and it is setting willing buyers with willing sellers to develop new sales. Again, the commission spent a limited grower dollars to get this accomplished. However, without the commission, this work would not be done in our state, and the team would not have visited Oregon. It would have visited the other states. Other success stories we've been directly involved include processed potatoes into Japan, Korea, Mexico, and other Pacific Rim countries. We're also working on other market access issues with the American Potato Trade Alliance, U.S. Potato Board, National Potato Council, and other state and industry groups to open markets for fresh potatoes and to reduce tariffs on potato products and address any phytosanitary issues. We assured your support of appropriate legislation to ensure the continued success of the Oregon Commodity Commissions and their ability to assist agriculture industry in adding dollars and jobs to our economy. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I have a question.
Give me an example of how this, you said that the research on potato varieties was beneficial to your commission, beneficial to potato farmers. Can you give an example of that?
Okay, there's a couple of varieties that are new and popular, Ranger and Umatilla, which has replaced Russet Burbank. And what it has is less inputs, so you save money and production costs. Also that the processors are requesting these varieties because they have characteristics that are above and beyond the current Russet Burbank variety. And part of going to the USDA for funds is to show an economic value of what you're doing. That's why the study was conducted in Idaho, to show that there was that return to every dollar invested.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's move on. I do want to say, try as much as possible to summarize your testimony because we are running late on
time. All right. I'm Deanne Amstead from Hermiston, Oregon. I'm a grower in Umatilla County with 2,800 acres of potatoes, wheat, and alfalfa. We truck our potatoes daily, year-round, to Washington County, where our packing shed is. I am not a member of the Oregon Potato Commission, but I am the first Oregon chairperson of the U.S. Potato Board. And I've spent 9 years on this board. I am co-chair of a national industry improvement plan to set standards for exporting and importing potato products. I am also a member of the Farm Bureau. The Oregon Potato Commission has a very small budget compared to states like Washington and Idaho. Our state commission has worked for Oregon potato growers, shippers, and processors, and we have worked with the U.S. Potato Board to extend the work and the return on potato growers' investment. The U.S. Potato Board applies for and receives market access program funds. The Potato Board cannot lobby, but Oregon can help lobby for these funds. The Oregon Potato Commission has a reputation throughout the U.S. as being the early adopter of working with the National Board. For years, Oregon has worked diligently to open new markets for potato products in Japan, Korea, Thailand, Indonesia, and Taiwan. Then, along with board funds, we have expanded these new markets. In the past, trade teams from Oregon have taken product and the message about the potatoes to these countries. Now that these countries are open for trade, the board and the commission help sponsor reverse trade missions. The U.S. Potato Institute each year spends considerable time in Oregon with the OPC as co-sponsors to promote our potato industry, which helps grow the Oregon economy. The focus now is on Mexico and China. As growers, we need the Oregon Potato Commission to speak and act through our appointed commissioners. If the Oregon Potato Commission had a refund provision, it would be impossible to budget and carry out strategic plans. If a large grower decided to ask for a refund, the whole program could collapse. Now more than ever, Oregon potatoes need a consistent program in place to further marketing our product. In the 80s, the U.S. Potato Board had a referendum vote to eliminate the refund provision. Since that time, the board has become a commodity group that is used by USDA as an example of a strong voice for our industry, working along with other national organizations in all states. So with all imports of produce coming into the U.S., we need more than ever to have a strong commission ran by the growers. We need to eliminate the possibility of threats of the unsafe food supply. And I might know that Oregon potatoes are the best.
I knew that.
Moving along.
Chairman Shields and the members of the committee, my name is Ed Macy. I'm from Culver in Central Oregon. I'm a grower of seed potatoes, wheat, grass seed, peppermint, vegetable seeds, and a few other crops also, and currently pay into three commodity commissions. Excuse me. I have served two terms on the Oregon Potato Commission. My father was on the Oregon Potato Commission for many, many years before they had term limits, and I also have my oldest son is currently serving on the Mint Commission in Oregon. I've also been involved through the Oregon Potato Commission with the opportunities that they have given me to be involved with the National Potato Council and served as vice president of the Trade Affairs Committee for 2 years. I, too, am also a member of the Oregon Farm Bureau and appreciate their efforts in this Senate bill that's being brought before us. And I think that the very important things and the questions that they've raised, I differ with them in support of the refund provision, and feel that in order to maintain the integrity of the mandatory assessment is the only way to retain the strong commodity commission structure that we have in Oregon, and particularly in the Oregon Potato Commission. I feel that growers have opportunities through other methods other than requesting refunds to influence and direct the work of the commodity commissions that they pay assessments into, and there's many avenues available to them. And I'm just going to hit a couple of issues because they've touched on everything else that I was going to talk about. The Oregon Potato Commission growers, through the commission, work extensively with the United States Potato Board and the National Potato Council on national issues of marketing, both in foreign and domestic, international trade issues, environmental and pesticide issues, legislative issues, representing all Oregon potato growers, and not just those who might choose to fund the commission's activities. And I think that that is a very important thing in considering when you're talking about mandatory assessments or refunds, availability of refunds. The Oregon Potato Commission and many other commodity commissions spend only a small portion, and in our case it's less than 15% of our assessments that are collected, on advertising and commodity promotion, both statewide and nationally. And the majority of our funds are spent on research and legislative issues affecting lobbying for things that we feel are good for our industry and good for the potato industry. I encourage your committee to approve Senate Bill 854 with the proposed amendments, which I feel are very important to consider. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Any questions? Thank you for coming forward. I'm now jumping across to the other side. There are some people that have come over 100 miles. Sharon Beck, Sharon Livingston, Glenn Stonebrink is... Huh? Thank you for coming today. Did Glenn leave? Okay. I guess Glenn is out of the room. He's making some copies of the Dash 1 amendments, which aren't in front of us yet, but if you can go ahead and make comments about them. Okay?
Okay.
Gentlemen,
my name is Sharon Beck. I'm past president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and as such, an ex officio member of the Oregon Beef Council. When I was president of OCA, I felt it was important to keep a strong bond between the council and OCA, since it is the producers' dollars that run the council. That cattlemen should be the benefactors of the programs and projects generated by the council, and because OCA has a major influence in getting the right people who represent the needs and desires of the cattle producers, on the beef council. Cattlemen believe there is more than an implied responsibility of the Oregon cattlemen and OBC to promote the interests of producers and protect them from the impediments of profitability and negative influences that make good management of our ranches and farms unnecessarily difficult or impossible. And in that spirit, we must oppose Senate Bill 854. I have provided you with letters from Mac Berkmeyer, another past president of OCA, Lee Insko, president of the Union County Cattlemen's Association, and Bob Beck, chairman of the OCA's Political Action Committee and past OBC chairman and council member for 6 years. I will paraphrase from those letters rather than to be repetitive. They are all very busy at home calving cows. Bob wanted you to know that someone has to take care of the calves so that the wolves have plenty to eat when they if they come to Oregon. The operative word there is it. I would remind you that among the four of us, there is a combined over a century and a half of experience and decades of leadership in the cattle industry, and that we share a philosophy that when you lead, it's a good idea to check back from time to time to see if anyone is following. The analogy of herding cats was invented for farmers and ranchers. From Lee Ansco's letter, I would just like to point out that we are opposed, the Union County Cattlemen are opposed, one, any rule changes that would allow the Oregon Beef Council to change the per-head assessment and other operational rules without a public hearing and voted upon agreement by the stakeholders. Two, the council membership that by law doesn't have members that specifically represent cattle producers. And three, membership of anyone who is not directly involved in the raising, finishing, and marketing of beef. Many of our organizations question the present function of the Oregon Beef Council in the generic advertising of beef. Many beef growers are moving to niche markets in order to survive the fiscal effects of both federal and state regulations. To change present commission rules in a manner that would enable a more liberalized approach to the assessment and expending of checkoff dollars at a state level, we feel would be fiscally detrimental to beef cattle producers as a whole. Bob Beck says, I have paid checkoffs since the inception of the present program. I paid the 10-cent head assessment before that when it would could be requested, or you could request the assessment back. I helped the National Beef Checkoff get passed. I helped get the OBC assessment raised to 50 cents per head and made it permanent and non-refundable. I believe the laws governing the OBC are sound and effective. They are a product of the cattlemen's own making and continue to evolve over time, and they should remain as they are. The OBC operates on producer money alone. It costs the state nothing because anything the state does for the program in a way of collection and administration is taken off of the funds collected from the sale of cattle each time they're sold. The funds are then spent by the industry under strict rules to promote the beef industry, educate about beef and the beef industry, and to enhance the image of the industry. The people who pay the money have sole discretion to spend the money for those things. Senate Bill 854 seeks to change that by requiring a new class of member onto the board called the public member. That was unanimously unacceptable to the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and it's unacceptable to me. When I served on the Beef Council, I believed that my job was to serve a constituency, that being the cow-calf producer, like me, to get the biggest bang for every dollar from my constituency. So I listened very closely to what my constituents wanted and needed, just as you do. Each and every one of them is the public. Each and every one is a consumer. It is our money. We shall decide how it is to be spent within the present law, and we will reap the benefits if there are any. If we need to know what the public thinks, we will generate consumer focus groups as we have done in the past, or survey the public for their input. But we must not have a non-paying member on the council. The original legislation that now governs the OBC went through a thoughtful process within the Cattlemen's Association. It was generated by cattlemen for cattlemen, and cattlemen shepherded it through the legislature. It had broad acceptance by the ranchers before it had any chance of getting through the legislative process, and it is still accepted by them as a good thing. Senate Bill 854 was not generated by cattlemen. Indeed, it was done in secrecy, generated by the bureaucracy for reasons and purposes that accommodated the bureaucracy rather than the cattle, beef and cattle producers. It is a fact that most producers still do not know about this legislation, and that as they learn about it and the elements of it, they are incensed. Mac Berkmeyer says OBC has served the beef industry well and will continue to do so if the laws governing it are not tampered with. 854 does intend to tamper with those laws governing the operation of OBC, and there is no apparent benefit to the beef producer for doing so. We could lose the present balance of industry segments on the board. We could lose the need and for broad industry acceptance of checkoff fee increases. We would weaken the effectiveness of the board's purpose and responsibility to the public if the public member is required by the council. The Oregon Cattlemen's Association Board of Directors has thoroughly studied this bill and unanimously agreed that the Oregon Beef Council must be removed from this legislation along with the statutes that presently enable the operation of the council. I strongly agree there is no purpose to fixing something that isn't broken. Thank you.
Thank you. Sharon? Here, excuse the pun, kind of sharing the table.
Sharing the, thank you. Senator Shields, members of the committee, my name is Sharon Livingston. My ranch is located in Grant County near Long Creek, Oregon. I'm a member of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, presently serve as their treasurer, and I'm one of the three executive board members for OCA. In October of 2002, I was asked by Oregon Cattlemen's Association President Bob Skinner to follow the progress of this legislation and Oregon Beef Council's involvement in it. Since that time, I've attended two meetings of the Oregon Beef Council and been a participant in a telephone conference concerning the above issue. I've also participated in discussions with the Beef Council and the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. At their legislative meeting, the Oregon Cattlemen's Association voted not to support Senate Bill 854 as a solution, but to offer our own legislation that would address issues necessary to update the present law under which they operate. The vote was unanimous. There were approximately 50 members present. Since that meeting, I have spoken personally with numerous operators around the state, producers that pay hundreds of dollars in beef checkoff, the program that funds the Oregon Beef Council. Jim Chapman, former Beef Council member, Ken Benson, former Beef Council member, both are opposed to Senate Bill 854. Roger Nicholson, a major producer in the Klamath area, is opposed. Fred Otley, past president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, very plainly stated that any attempt to change the present structure of the Oregon Beef Council would be a disconnect from the producers of the beef that pay the checkoff dollars, and that Oregon Beef Council would lose the grassroots involvement in that program. The people I've spoken with, if there is any increase in the checkoff dollars, they want it to be as it presently is, not by rule. They pay the bill. In addition, they want the selection of Beef Council members to remain as it is now. My late husband, Fred Livingston, was a brand inspector and producer when the Beef Council and the checkoff came into being, and he spent hours of his own time trying to educate and encourage people not to return the checkoff fee. The beef producers in the state of Oregon support the checkoff. They point to the fact that the national checkoff is being litigated because those paying the fee feel strongly that they're not being allowed to direct those funds. Producers in Oregon want to remain and retain their present status. It's essential that the Oregon Beef Council remain involved with the grassroots producers as it is now. To change that involvement as directed by Senate Bill 854 would not be in the best interests of beef producers. Thank you.
Thank you. Glenn, a few comments?
Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we have -1 amendments. They're actually being copied. I figure I'd better get here. I'll have them to you before the end of the day. What our amendments do is to remove the Oregon Beef Council as one of the commissions from the other 28. And the main reason for that is because the Oregon Beef Council, first of all, works under federal law. The assessment, the dollar checkoff, as we call it, in essence goes to the control of the Cattlemen's Beef Board at the national level under federal law, and then half of that is sent back to Oregon, roughly. Okay. What happens, and we don't have a problem with the amendment that Farm Bureau has put forward to allow for a refund, but if that were to occur, we actually wouldn't get the money back into the producers' hands at all. They would be kept at the national level. And that's one reason that we oppose Senate Bill 854. Secondly, that the cattlemen do not believe that the increase in the assessment should be done by rule with the Oregon Beef Council. We believe it should be done as it is in present law by statute, and we would have to come and lobby you, we the producers, and so on. The other issues are one that we did not agree that the Oregon Beef Council should be spending the producers' checkoff dollars to hold meetings out of state. And then the other issue is that if Senate Bill 854 is passed, it will grant power to the Beef Council by rule to determine how the members, the new members of the council, will be selected in the future. Presently, it's in statute. It's very concrete. We've lived with it. We think it's fine. So for those reasons, we oppose Senate Bill 854. Now, we still have to address on the other side, well, what about the non-delegation of authority that's in the statute that regulates the Oregon Beef Council? And we're not addressing it yet, but that's the other bill that is on the schedule, Senate Bill 674, where we do that. We remove the referendum process, which, in other words, we remove the non-delegation of authority from the Oregon Beef Council. But we do operate, our Beef Council operates under the federal law, and the federal law and the U.S. Department of Agriculture then take care of the free speech issue. So we don't believe we needed to be treated in with the other 28 commission.
Thank you. Questions? I'm going to keep moving on here.
Thank you.
Yes. Diane Byrne Johnson, Mike
Cordy,
and Kurt Johnson. I'm looking around, checking to see if there are other people that have come more than 100 miles. Because we want to make sure we get all them. And I will get to you, although I'm trying to go on the pro and con on the issue. So I'll get there as fast as I can. Again, I'd like to encourage you to summarize testimony. We're beginning to hear a lot of stuff that's repetitive. We're looking for new information here that you might have. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairman Shields and the committee for... I'm Diane Byrne Johnson, the Executive Director of the Oregon Beef Council. I didn't come over 100 miles today. I just came from Portland, but I've got two events going on there, a restaurant show and a dietetic convention. I think that tells you how important these checkoff dollars are and how much good we do for these industries. So I need to head back there as soon as I can. I'm happy to respond to your invitation to appear at this hearing to present the Oregon Beef Council's position on Senate Bill 674 and Senate Bill 854. A seven-member board of directors appointed by the Director of the Department of Agriculture at the recommendation of the beef industries oversees the Oregon Beef Council. They represent the various segments and also the over 15,000 producers who own cattle in the state. It's made up of cow-calf producers, one feeder, one handler, and two dairy representatives. I think it's important to point out some of the things that distinguishes the beef industry from some of the other commodities in the state. According to our governing statute, that 50 cents per head was collected at the time of sale. In 1986, there a federal law began to became into effect, and at that time the Oregon Beef Council was identified as a qualified state beef council. It applied for and was granted that status. So because of that, the USDA's Beef Promotion and Research Order oversees what we do, as well as our own state statute here, 577. In becoming a qualified state beef council, the Oregon Beef Council agreed to collect that dollar per head assessment on behalf of the Cattlemen's Beef Board and received the credit back of 50 cents. That dollar per head checkoff is mandatory. Should the national program cease, Oregon would go back to their original position, and that is ORS 577, and we would continue to collect our 50 cents per head. In the event that the Beef Council's authority, Oregon Beef Council's authority, is halted for any reason, such as being refundable, that dollar, as Glenn said earlier, would still be collected. Producers would still pay a dollar per head, but instead of the Oregon Beef Council getting 50 cents back, it would all go to the national programs. The National Beef Checkoff Program is currently the subject of several of these court cases that really stimulated this whole process here. The resulting decisions, in particular in regard to beef, have been in conflict with each other and are being appealed to higher courts. As a result of this challenging litigation, the Beef Council was a participant in the study, and that is allowable by both our national and our state governing laws. As a result of this analysis done by the Department of Justice, the Beef Council was included in Senate Bill 854. This would eliminate the Beef Council's existing statute 577. After consultation with the Cattlemen's Beef Board, it was determined that the Beef Council cannot be a requester or fund lobbying efforts, but we can be included in this bill. At a meeting that we held on March 5th, the Beef Council passed a motion to back Senate Bill 854 with specific amendments that the industry recommends as the Council gets feedback from industry organizations such as the Oregon Cattlemen's Association and the Department of Justice. On March 14th, the Council met via a conference call to review the recommendation made by the Oregon Cattlemen's Association at their March 6th and 7th meeting. And their recommendation was to not support Senate Bill 854 and instead to introduce Senate Bill 674. Following a discussion on the Oregon Cattlemen's Association recommendation, the Council again voted and passed a motion to support Senate Bill 854 as written with any new amendments, and I understand that there are some that have just come across today. They would like to look at those as well. But their recommendation at that meeting was to support Senate Bill 854 as written at that time. The Council also voted to support Senate Bill 674, the one brought forth by the Cattlemen's Association, but not in lieu of 854. Thank you for this opportunity to provide an overview of the Beef Council and its actions regarding these issues, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I guess my only question would be, and having not seen the Dash ones yet, but they were spoken to, that they would remove OBC from Senate Bill 854. Would you then still be in support of 854 with the Dash 1 amendments?
I cannot give an opinion for the Council, but I would need to go back to the Council, have them look at those changes, and then make a decision.
Thank you. Go ahead.
See, Mr. Chairman is gone, but Mr. Vice Chairman and other members of the committee, my name is Mike Corchi. I have farmed in northern Wasco County since about 1965, raising wheat, cattle, barley, cherries, and a small amount of wine grapes. Presently, I'm farming with my son, Jeff, who's leasing our farms. With the return of a more normal weather pattern this spring, we anticipate harvesting approximately 250,000 bushels of grain from our nearly 5,000 acres of cropland this year. Or at least that's what our banker believes. And I don't say that to be boastful, just to lend some credibility to my testimony. I'm the current chairman of the Oregon Wheat Commission, current vice chairman of the Oregon Wheat Commission, and as well as the past president of the Oregon Wheat Growers League, as are all of the current commissioners. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Wheat Commission to speak in favor of Senate Bill 854 and the amendments previously presented. This legislation is necessary to ensure the continuation of the extremely important programs provided by the grower dollars that this commission administers. I'm going to skip through this rather rapidly and eliminate some of the things that you've already heard several times, but the commission currently represents nearly 500 producers, and we have an assessment level of 3 cents per bushel. The commission has been committed to maintaining and developing programs in research, marketing, education, and those programs that are consistent with the needs of our growers. We have continued in that commitment during this process of drafting legislation to resolve the legal issues with which we are currently confronted. Over the past few months, we've been busy educating ourselves, as well as others, as to the need of this legislation. We found there to be a very steep learning curve to this issue. Many growers' initial reaction was one of panic. Oh, my God, they're going to make us a state agency. The departments are taking our commission away from us, not realizing that we already are a state agency and always have been and always will be. But once this kind of publicity got started, it was difficult to turn around. Throughout these events, our growers have expressed concerns about the additional oversight as well as the cost of that additional oversight, and also the need for maintaining our current legislation. The growers have requested we maintain Chapter 578, not only for its historical significance, but also to protect our independence. If Chapter 578 is not included, the Oregon Wheat Commission would have essentially no flexibility to amend the statute, if the need should arise, without all other commodity commissions agreeing to the modifications. We feel reasonably safe from litigation regarding promotional activity. The Oregon Wheat Commission does not engage in promotional activities targeting consumers. You will never see a TV commercial advertising the other white wheat. Although we understand and agree with many of the growers' concerns, as commissioners, we do not feel they are all fully justified. In an effort to reach a compromise, the Wheat Commission has requested an option for refundability, which would allow us to opt out of the oversight should it become too restrictive or too costly. It's for these reasons that we are requesting the amendments to Senate Bill 854, which include the revision of 578 to meet the legal concerns of the Department of Justice, as well as the option for refundability. I'd like to also clarify that while we are in full support of including Chapter 578, we are not in support of mandatory refunds. Our staff have conducted extensive research exploring the programs of other states that offer refunds, and from that research, we have concluded that refundability is not a feasible solution for the Oregon Wheat Commission. We feel it would weaken our commission by causing insecurity in our program funding, cause costly budgeting problems, and it would allow some of our growers to receive the benefits of the commission without paying their fair share. When the League established the commission in 1947, they recognized the need for mandatory assessments, and we believe that is still true today. We have long been bothered by our neighbors that do not support the Oregon Wheat Growers League with membership dues. We have all attended events sponsored by the League where non-members attend, eat lunch or dinner, glean the information provided by the League, and then leave, never to contribute. It is our opinion that these same producers will be the first in line to request a refund, and some of them are very large producers. Presently, the Oregon Wheat Growers League membership includes only 40% of our assessment payers. If we can't convince our growers to contribute to the Oregon Wheat Growers League, how can we expect that they will voluntarily contribute to the Wheat Commission? We firmly believe that if we were to offer refunds, the actual request for refund would be somewhere around the neighborhood of 20%, if not more. As you've heard before, Oklahoma's refund rate is 18 to 20%. Kansas is around 11%. And again, Wyoming is 30%. But you have to remember that their assessment level is only 1 cent per bushel. So a $500 refund to a Kansas farmer would equate to a $1,500 refund to a producer here in Oregon. During hard times, it is most likely that our assessment level, assessment refund level, would most likely increase. If a grower has the option of making a payment on his operating loan or contributing to the commission, most will make the loan payment. While many, if not most, of our larger producers do recognize the value of our research and other benefits that our assessments provide, that may not keep them from requesting a refund. So it's very difficult to predict with any degree of accuracy what our actual dollar amount of refunds we will actually experience. However, from a dollar and cent standpoint, a refund rate above 3.4% will not be cost effective. A 20% rate of refund would cost the commission almost $75,000 over and above the cost of the projected additional oversight. If we choose to offer refunds simply to reduce the cost of oversight, we are cutting off our nose to spite our face. It is the opinion of the Oregon Wheat Commission that Senate Bill 854 and the proposed amendments updating Chapter 578 are in the best interest of the Oregon wheat industry, and I'd like to thank the committee for this opportunity to present the views of the Oregon Wheat Commission.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Ms. Kurt, again, we're just asking people to summarize your testimony because we are running out of time.
But that hasn't worked so far, right?
I've noticed.
I'm going to try something real fresh here besides Oregon-grown chicken, and that is that the majority of the broiler growers who I represent are in favor of this bill for obvious reasons. Number one, the DOJ said we should be. But besides that, we've existed for 40-some-odd years for very good reason, and there's Oregon-grown chicken in every store for very good reason. And everybody's benefited from it, every broiler grower, not just half of them or any. They've all benefited from it, and so therefore we are behind it 100%. And many of us are Farm Bureau members.
Thank you for that brief testimony.
You bet.
It's so good. I want to make sure you put your name on the record.
I'm sorry, Kurt Johnston.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions? Yeah, I'm trying again to go to the other side of the issue. I want to thank this panel that's come on. It looks, on the other side, it looks like Lynn Long and Terry Peters may have come over 100 miles, and I want to get them in. And that would conclude the number of people that have come over 100 that marked that. Also, while Terry is not here, I'll pull up Phil Olson, who's also against a no on the issue, so come on up. And let's hear from you two, and then we'll go back to the pro side.
Mr. Chairman Shields.
Yes.
I am Lynn Long, a grain farmer from Klamath Falls. I currently serve as Klamath County President of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. I'm a member of the Oregon Farm Bureau and past chairman of the Oregon Grains Commission. I would like to speak in strong support of the amendments to Senate Bill 854, which would provide for the continued independence of the Oregon Wheat Commission and the development of refund provisions for all agricultural commodity commissions. I concur with and support the detailed testimony given in this matter by both the Oregon Wheat Growers League and the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. As a full-time farmer from the Klamath Basin, I have felt the pain of too much government in the lives of Oregonians. Now I question the wisdom of making our agricultural commodity commissions come under greater government scrutiny and government control. Of particular concern to me today is the fate of the Oregon Grains Commission. Without the ability to offer refunds to the growers, this small commission, although be it very effective, could easily get bogged down in a quagmire of bureaucracy and perhaps totally fail in its mission to serve Oregon barley farmers. My previous experience with the National Barley Growers Association and the U.S. Grains Council leads me to believe that potential refunds to growers will be relatively minor. I urge this committee to adopt the necessary amendments to Senate Bill 854 in order to allow Oregon farmers and ranchers the freedom to pursue economic well-being guided by our own initiative, our intellect, and our resourcefulness. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me say what I'm thinking, and I'm going to say this to Judith and ask her to implement this. We still have 25 or 30 people that want to testify. We're supposed to go to the Senate floor at 11 o'clock for a floor session, but we're going to ask that we be excused until we actually start voting on bills or till about 11:30 or whatever. All right? What I'm asking you to do is to try and keep your comments to a couple minutes, and maybe we'll be able to get everybody heard. We're not very confident of this plan, but we're going to try, okay? So with that, Phil, go ahead for a couple minutes.
Senator Shields, member of the committee, thanks very much for this opportunity. I'll do my best. I produce Marionberries, Boysenberries, and Blueberries in Yamhill and Marion counties. By the way, I'm Phil Olson. I farm in Yamhill, as I just indicated, in Yamhill County. For the record, I'm a member of the Farm Bureau. I haven't always been in favor of their positions, and this particular instance with 854, I believe they've got it figured out. I'm generally in favor of the existing system of operation of Oregon's Commodity Commission system. I have no personal intentions at this moment to do any opt-out provision should one be offered. We are faced with a dilemma here today because of Oregon DOJ's finding in light of nationwide court proceedings our Commodity Commission are apparently operating illegally. I disagree with Senate Bill 854's solution to the problem of merely taking the existing structure and making them state agencies. This bill effectively captures an existing system that was voted into existence by its producers with the thought that they could deactivate it if they saw fit. I do not, as an agriculture producer, do not take it lightly to knowingly have my constitutional rights, which have been acknowledged by the agencies, taken from me through state-sponsored or endorsed legislation. I think it's wrong to admit that we're violating our federal constitutional rights and write legislation that makes that legal. That's a precedent I'm not real comfortable with. I pay assessments to two commissions. I can't recall any general publications mailed to inform the ag community of the ramifications of this bill. It's noted that the commissions are the sponsors of this bill. Please note, they're not saying the producers, they're saying the commissions. And once again, I'm not aware. The only reason I'm here today is because I try to pay a little bit of attention to some of the other news authorities or agencies, but it has nothing to do with my commissions that I pay close to $20,000 into informing me of those activities of this bill. The following is, there's a laundry list of problems with this bill. Fundamentally, I believe that Oregon growers need less government interaction, not more. Some of the legislative concerns, which I think should bother some of the folks in legislature, are that this potentially encumbers state and general funds by allowing commissions, which they will now be agencies, to borrow money and enter into contracts. Now, the law says within there that you can borrow money up until what you expect to receive in the next year. If there's a crop failure, who's going to pay? It's a state agency. I think the state pays. Producers' concerns are it puts us into the form of lobbyists. There were a number of people I could not talk to that were interested in coming here, but they're out putting fertilizer on and other things. And they view me and say, well, when you do your lobbying thing, Phil, well, I'm a farmer, and that's the only way I get my money. So we're going to be lobbyists now instead of doing what we do now and talk to the, our grower-controlled commissions. There are one part within this bill completely flies in the face of the independent nature of Oregon producers. As to quote it, it will adopt rules to develop market restrictions to stabilize the flow of commodity products to market. Now, I've heard some testimony to the contrary today that might not be pulled out, but that shows how this bill was put together without grower input. The problems to both Oregon agriculture producers and the legislature are many, and the solution is simple. Create a refund program. It's amazing how easy it was for me to find out, how easy that was. I made two calls. I called the state of Colorado, Department of Agriculture, talked to the persons in charge of what they call marketing orders there, but they function in a very similar way. The ones I talked to said that that the commissions, and this I could get his name, I think his name is Jim Rubing, state of Colorado, of those, they experienced about a 1.5%. We've heard all numbers all over the board, but I've heard 1.5%. There is one corn that's a fair amount higher, but he went into the reasons for that it's a deficit state, and you have to fall off your stool before you can't sell your corn over there. So there are some reasons people opt out of that one. A refund program would eliminate most of the legal problems now facing the commodity commissions. A refund program would allow producers to remain in control. A refund program would eliminate the need for more government involvement. A refund program would make commodity commissions accountable to producers by giving them a vote in the decisions of the commissions. We're not making a wheel here. This exists and is functioning in a number of states. A refund provision commonly called opt-out is nothing new. Midwestern states have used it, have indicated it's a small price to pay to keep commissions controlled by those who are supposed to serve. I made a couple of notes on some testimony, or prior testimony. One, we need to understand this is a gross tax. What that means is it comes off before we pay food for the family. It's a gross tax. It comes off. And that's why you don't see quite as much, and you'd be a lot more negative if we ask people to write the checks back to the commissions. This is, it says CMO on your check, and I could bet I could go out and ask 5 out of 10 people, they wouldn't know what CMO means on their check when it's deducted. So what we're saying is that it comes in front of fertilizer, seed, college fund for our kids, and it's the most absolute, the most important thing on our farm because there's nothing else, including what we get to pay to help pay the state out of its problems in form of income tax to solve our problems. So it's got to be just a hugely important thing. Well, I don't think it's that important. The other thing is, what needs to be pointed out, is that we could be talking the same money. There's no assurance there'll be $1 lost to the commissions. I'll explain how that works. I pay into two commissions, the Oregon Raspberry Blackberry Commission, or Caneberry Commission as you referred to, and the Oregon Blueberry Commission. Neither one of those commissions are levying near their maximum authority. It's somewhere around 1%. They could increase their funding by 50%. And if they had a 50% reduction in the receivables, the only way you would have an automatic reduction would be if you were already levying maximum amount. And the ones I'm involved with are not. So I don't think we should assume that we're going to have a reduction in funds. Also, commissions are no guarantee of our success. The two most important or most successful industries are the Oregon Association of Nurserymen and the Christmas Tree people, who have voluntary contributions. And the Farm Bureau's volunteer contribution, it doesn't look like the Farm Bureau's running out of members. So I don't think it ought to be a mass, think of it as a mass exodus from our commissions. This is a legislation assumes that we are not capable to manage our own affairs. This legislation means that I'm not smart enough to determine where my money's going to go. I've been farming with my wife for almost 30 years, and we've made some decisions correct, and not all of them, but we are still prevailing, and we need the ability to continue to manage our expenses fair, our expenses on the farm. So I ask, please help Oregon's agriculture industry by amending 854 through the inclusion of a refund option for our commission system.
Thank you. We're still moving on as fast as we can. Another list, Scott Faber, Ralph Dyke, Jim Mullen from Tillamook County. You're here. Don't mind me, I'm a little distracted. I'd like to apologize to everybody for that. I'm just trying to move us along and trying to do the mathematics on this. So go ahead and start.
Okay.
Summarize your testimony, please.
Okay. My name is Scott Faber, and I have a 150-cow dairy here in Salem. I'm a member of the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association Board of Directors. I'd like to testify in support of this bill. I believe the commission plays an important role in the Oregon agriculture industry and has a direct effect on the Oregon economy. At the same time, I would urge you to avoid amendments to this bill that would limit the ability for the commission to operate, such as providing for a refund of assessments. As a dairy farmer, I'm always concerned about any mandatory expenses. However, I must also consider the benefits I receive from these expenses. In the case of promotion dollars going to the commission, I feel these benefits far outweigh the expenses. At the same time, I recognize that a number of producers will view this as an opportunity to reduce expenses or to voice a dissenting opinion. As we see here at this hearing, that number could be quite high because of disagreement over specific issues. I think the ability for individuals to request a refund would lead to serious consequences, including the lack of ability for the commission to project income and thus lose the ability to enter into long-term contracts or programs. This would directly affect their ability to help develop new products and to fund research or promotion. It would allow those producers who request a refund to continue at least for a time to benefit from the deduction applied to others who choose not to request a refund. It would cause the commission to spend time and money promoting the commission to producers rather than promoting and developing products. And if enough producers requested a refund, the commission would be forced to shut down. This would mean a loss of jobs here in Oregon, a loss of local control of promotion dollars. In the case of the dairy industry, the money would not go back to producers, but instead would go to national programs over which we have very little control and which have limited benefits for our local products. I believe that the loss of a fully functioning commission would be detrimental to the Oregon economy and to the Oregon agriculture industry, so I support, urge you to support this bill.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Here, Mr. Chairman and Agriculture and Natural Resource Committee. My name is Ralph Dyke. My address is 9530 Northwest Roy Road in Forest Grove, Oregon. I own and operate a diversified dairy farm of 60 cows. I currently pay assessments to the following commissions: the Dairy Products Commissions, the Oregon Beef Council, the Wheat and the Clover Commissions. Recently, I had to pay into some of these commissions for over 40 years. The commodity commissions perform a severe service to all producers in the state of Oregon. At the present time, they develop new products, instruct and educate the consumer on the usefulness of the product, fund scholarships, and fund promotion and research. Plus, they are involved in many other programs, such as the following nutritional programs to the public and school systems, advertising and marketing on their own products, and etc. I am also a member of the Farm Bureau for over 40 years. I also support the authority for commissions to lobby on behalf of this industry. We need mandatory producer assessments to carry on all the different programs in the state of Oregon. I support the Beef Council to stay in the bill. As you know, 33% of the Beef Council's money comes from dairy producers, and the dairy industry is strongly behind the Oregon Beef Council. The Department of Justice has reviewed our statutes. Senate Bill 854 is an outcome of that review. I do not want this bill weakened by a self-interest group that are only thinking about themselves and not about the economic benefits to all producers. And I must say, on a refunding ability, with me milking 60 cows last year, I paid $2,300 and some dollars into the commission as assessments. And you just do the figures on a producer that's milking 20,000 cows, which we do have in Oregon at this time. And to him, it would be a big benefit to have his refund assessments. A question come up earlier today about the commissions not getting involved in the ABT issue. I think they need to check with the Attorney General and the Justice Department on that, because I don't believe commissions can get involved in those kind of situations. The commissioners are all producers, except for maybe one. In our Dairy Products Commission, it's only there's one processor and there's six producers. They talked about this is not producers. The commissions are not producers. They are all producers. And the thing is that some people are disgruntled, and they're taking it out through another avenue because they don't want to come to the commission and talk to the commissions. If the commodity commissions get into a liquidation, we will be spending a lot of our time and resources in the courtrooms, in the court systems, instead of spending our money on research and development. The Beef Council and the dairy products, well, that one has already been mentioned, our refunds would go back to the national programs. And I think we ought to let each grower-producer commission determine their own destiny in this decision. And the commissions are run by the growers, because they are growers who are on those commissions that are run up. I want to thank you very much for giving me this time to express my personal convictions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have a couple more no's on the... I'm still trying to do this pro and con thing. One of my former colleagues, Liz Van Leeuwen, and Mike Townsend from Townsend Farms. Are you still here?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Come on up and hold forth for a moment. Liz, we'll let you go first. It's good to see you. Glad you're here today.
Okay, thank you. And it's kind of interesting to be on this end of it instead of the other end. I think you have... Do they have my testimony? Okay, we'll have shortly a few things that I saw as I'm waiting for you to get that in hand. I'm here today. I'm Liz Van Leeuwen, private citizen. I belong to many of the organizations that are involved in agriculture, and no, I haven't laid down and quit. Yes. One of the things that was just referred to was budgets for the commissions. I don't quite know how to respond to that, but we who are the producers have no assurance that we are going to have a budget each year, how much money we're going to have in that budget, weather, insects, disease, imports, government regulations, all of that affects us. And what you have in your hand now is what my husband George Van Leeuwen wrote to you, and I'm in concurrence with it. We have real deep concerns about what we have seen in Senate Bill 854, but we do not have the amendments you've been talking about this morning. I'll try to go through real quickly. George tells that we have been involved for years and we're very much in support of the promotion that the funds have done in the past and the funding for disease and pest research, and that we really have been involved, and I think currently George and I pay into three commissions. Maybe that's all right now. We've paid into others in the past. He says, we see the following problems regardless of the stated intents and purposes, metamorphosing the producer-funded and controlled commissions into state agencies, and somebody claimed we already are, will surely diminish initiative, imagination, and efficiencies now remaining, and will further bureaucratize the entire system. In my opinion, the last thing our bedraggled, beaten-up ag families and employees need is yet another layer of government farmers' help. And I'll say amen to that. I'm seeing if I can skip the next, but one of the things that's been happening so far, I'm in number two, is there's been considerable promotion going on in the ryegrass cover crop situation in the corn and soybean areas of southern Illinois and maybe some of the other states, which has been beneficial. But commodity promotions may have outlived their usefulness for two reasons. The general promotions have fairly well saturated the market, and number two, a large part of the production is now proprietary varieties, with the owners of those varieties doing their specific marketing. George says, may I suggest that the constitutional free speech problem supposedly addressed by the bill be simply solved by eliminating all promotional activities and concentrate on research and transportation problems. In summary, we support Oregon Farm Bureau's concept of refunding commission taxes to those who so request, perhaps with a required minimum number of requests, if that would be legally acceptable. In this way, each commission and its executive director would have to be producing results the producers would willingly pay for, or the commission would be unfunded. And George said, I would rather see the entire commission system abolished than have the commissions become totally state agencies. And then the final paragraph, I think, is key. I've been a long time without a drink of water, so my mouth is pretty dry, you guys. I believe the Senate Ag Committee would greatly boost the legislators' credibility if it would seek an up or down vote by all commission producers before passing any proposed legislation on the issues at stake here. Thank you very much. I believe the ag lobbyists pushing this bill are putting their personal interests ahead of the welfare of the producers they are supposed to represent. Suspect most producers are uninformed of what is being proposed. Thank you for your consideration. And then in listening to the testimony on page 4 of your bill, Section 6, Sub 8, on the pesticides issue, that would scare any farmer to death, the way that's written, if you look at it. It says, participate in federal, and I know the explanation that I think it was Chuck gave, but that would scare any farmer to death just looking at that, saying that once this is made that way, they would participate in state hearings and proceedings. I understand what you're saying, Chuck, but boy, it better be stated differently than that. Then you've already got the fact that there is not complete consensus out there. And from Liz Van Leeuwen herself, former legislator, comes this. In my mind, we haven't really run into any trouble yet. This is not the most critical issue that you, as legislators, in my mind, should be trying to settle now. The commission system is not broken at the present minute, and other things in our economy certainly are. And yes, responding to somebody else, I hope we never have to fear the Department of Agriculture. That's for you, Katie. Thank you. Chairman, I didn't properly address you to begin with, Senator Shields, Senators Beyer, and Senator Fisher. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
It's good to have you here today, Liz. Yes, Senator Fisher.
Yeah, Liz, I notice and appreciate you coming. It is indeed strange, having sat on your committee with you as a chair, to have you down there supplicating us now.
Liz, I hope you trust me.
About having an up or down vote by all commission producers before passing a proposed legislation, is that really a practical way of doing that?
Well, with something as important as this, I think it is. It may not be practical, but let me tell you, most of us out there did not know that some of the people who supposedly represent us on the commissions had used a whole chunk of our monies to pay the Department of Justice and to pay certain lobbyists to come in and work this bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Fisher.
They need to communicate with us maybe more closely.
How long do you think something like that would take in view of the process of how long we're here?
Well, to the next session, there's almost two years. I don't think it's something that needs to be addressed at the moment. I know they've been working pretty hard on you guys, but apparently, from what I hear. And yes, I belong to Farm Bureau. I belong to all sorts of things. Women for Ag, American Agri Women.
Right.
Wheat, well, something or another.
Thank you.
Soil and water. What else do you want?
I'm going to ask Mike if. Thank you, Liz. I do appreciate your coming and sharing. But I'm going to move on and ask Mike Townsend from Townsend Farms.
Thank you. Chairman Shields, Senator Fisher, Senator Beyer, and Senator Corcoran. I'd like to start off by saying that we're for the fact that we like to see growers have a choice, so we're against 854 and we're for refundability. We'd like to see more grower control and less government. To give you a scope of Townsend Farms, we're a grower of over 1,200 acres of blueberries. We're a grower of over 1,200 acres in Washington County, Multnomah County, Marion County, Clackamas County, and Josephine County. We grow strawberries, red raspberries, Marion berries, blueberries, Chester blackberries, and we also support three commissions. The scope of our product is fresh. We're the largest fresh grower. We're not necessarily the largest producer of fresh, but the largest fresh grower in Oregon. We're also the largest grower of frozen fruit in Oregon for polybag consumption. We're also the largest processor of frozen fruit, and we're also the largest cash buyer. I just like to give some overviews, kind of what I see within our industry in terms of refundability. We've seen a lot of growers that are now becoming processors, and it's important that you understand that they need those dollars for niche markets. I think in this world that we live in today, it's very important that we understand that, we're in a world trade situation as growers in this, in cane fruits, meaning raspberries, strawberries, and blueberries. Katie brought up a good point in terms of grass seed. Commissions are good at helping fund sales for grass seed in China. Chinese strawberries that are shipped in the United States are 55 cents a pound. I pay the grower 45 to 50 cents a pound. My selling price is 85 cents a pound. Theirs is 55. So it's hard for me to want to see a lot of those dollars for marketing within the commissions go towards an area that I can't compete in, and neither can any of my growers. And I hope you understand that the strawberry industry has shrunk from 75 million pounds down to 30 million pounds. I don't want to take up a lot.
Over what time frame?
Over the last 10 years. I'd also like to point out that we're the largest buyer of blueberries in the world, probably. We buy over 8 million pounds of blueberries. We probably bag for Kroger, Safeway, and a lot of the major chains. Because of the exchange rate, our dollars are going to areas like Canada, where they support and market fresh blueberries against towns and farms.
Excuse me, Mike. Can I just back up a little bit? Because you're into the mic so much you're getting fuzzy.
I'm sorry. So I guess what I'm trying to point out is that we're in a world market. I'm sorry. Okay.
There. Oh.
Sorry if I'm
better mics than we used to have, huh?
But the joys of technology. Go ahead,
yeah.
Mike.
My point is that I'd love to promote and successfully market more, as an example to you, blueberries out of the state of Oregon. But it's hard for me to see the dollars that are spent, maybe in commissions, to the fact that we can't garner those dollars and be successful within the marketplace, and that creates jobs for Oregonians and for our people that work for us. Our payroll is over $12 million. And I think that, you know, what we're asking for is let there be a level playing field. Let water seek its own level. Let the growers ask you people. Maybe we should have some kind of a survey from the growers who actually pay into this association or into this commission. I think that would be a good idea. But I think that I have to compete in the world market. My dad used to be in the dairy business, and he'd compete against some other dairy that's local. Okay, so believe me, it's a niche market now, and we need all our dollars that we can spend towards aggressively being competitive in a world market. And I think that commissions in terms of research are important. I think that commissions are important in terms of, like, blackberries. They don't grow marionberries in a lot of other countries, so we need to fund our dollars towards marionberries. And I hope you understand. If you have any questions, please ask me.
No questions, apparently.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to go to John Langdon, Tim Butler, Jerry
McGruth, I would say, something like that.
And again, we are hearing some very unique stuff. For instance, the last witness, but at the same time, we hear a lot of repetitive stuff. So try to summarize, try to share any new insights that you might have. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Chairman Shields, members of the committee, my name is Tim Butler. I farm with my brothers at Butler Valley Farms in Staten, Oregon. We raise vegetable crops for Norfac Foods, peppermint, grass seed, and wheat. So with that, I am a member of five commodity commissions. I'm also a member of Farm Bureau. From the testimony I've heard here today, I'm somewhat confused, as you may be also. I'm in support, originally came here in support of Senate Bill 854 and still am. I believe in maintaining integrity of the commodity commissions. I think the issue comes down to a position of funding promotion and product and then funding crop research. And I'm in favor, I'm most concerned about the crop research part of the commodity commissions. The vegetable commission, the mint commission, grass seed are primarily commodity commissions that fund crop and production research, and that's my biggest concern, where all the growers benefit from that production research, and I think that needs to be maintained. If we, you can do this legislation and do it in such a way as that we can make it mandatory funding for production research and refundability for marketing, you could kill two birds with one stone right there. And I'm also, a part of this I'm concerned about is the public member of these commodity commissions. That part deeply concerns me. So with that, I thank you for this opportunity.
Chairman Shields, members of the committee, my name is John Langdon. I'm a grass seed farmer from the Harrisburg area, and I'm in favor of Senate Bill 854. And I believe I'm also a member of the Farm Bureau and do not support refundability for the commissions. Everything else I've got to say has been said several times. So.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Margath. I'm a farmer down in the Junction City area. I currently pay assessments into five different commodity commissions, and I'm also a member of the Farm Bureau. I'm the current chair of the Oregon Mint Commission, chair of the Oregon Seed Council, and I do support Senate Bill 854 as amended. I do not support refundability. I believe that, number one, we're not in a bulk commodity state such as Kansas with over 200 minor crops in the state. The commissions that we have serve a very useful function, and we operate in a much different fashion. If you institute refundability, then all growers will benefit, even though only part of the growers are paying the bill. I believe that Senate Bill 854, as amended, will allow commodity commissions to operate pretty much as they have in the past. Growers will still be in control of the commissions. The process, at least in my experience, has not been held in secret. I've more or less been inundated with the progress of the group putting together the proposed legislation. And I currently feel that I've got more voice with my five commodity commissions than I do with the Oregon Farm Bureau. And thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Here, just a clarification report. Excuse me, did you say you were the chairman of a commission or a commission member?
I'm chair of the Oregon Mint Commission.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to ask Michael Gibson and Joanne Hathaway, if they're still here, to come forward. Since you're here first, you can start. Okay? Go ahead.
I'm Joanne Hathaway. I live at 1531 Southeast Kiger Island Drive at Corvallis. We have a farm and a forestry. Currently, the crops which we grow on our farm would pay into commissions would be hazelnuts, wheat, grass, mint, and I may have forgotten something that I'm not aware of. We do pay also with the forestry tax that you spoke about. And we are opposed to the legislation that is being proposed in the Senate bill. I oppose strongly the bill, but I support commissions just as strongly. I am very much a supporter of commissions. They have done a lot of good, especially in the area of research. We would not be where we are. However, I am rather unhappy that I have not heard from anyone except the Wheat League I have heard from that this has been proposed. None other than the commission has even sent anything that says that they're talking about this. I get it from Farm Bureau and I get it from the Capital Press, but otherwise the news isn't there. I think that it's premature to dump everything until we know more about what the legal situation here is. I'm just not comfortable jumping out of the frying pan into the fire, possibly. If a refund option could correct our problem, I would support that. I oppose any further government regulation, and my experience has been that in many cases, the commissions don't always, just because they're growers, don't always represent the growers who are out there. They've been handpicked because of the opinion that they have oftentimes. And so they don't represent the grower just because they are out, the commissioners are a grower. But I would support a refund program, and I also, if you do decide to do something, I think you need to have a sunset so that you look at this to see whether it's working.
Thank you.
My name is Michael Gibson. I farm down near Junction City, and I presently pay assessments to 8 different commissions. I'm on a commission, the Mint Commission. I favor Senate Bill 854. And I'm opposed to, I am a member of the Farm Bureau, but I'm opposed to the Farm Bureau's refund provision.
Okay. Thank you both for your testimony. I'm going to call Scott Holliday, Ron Rivers, and Jason Parsons. If they could come. Whoever gets seated first gets to start. I'm trying to make this musical chairs or whatever.
I'll try to get this over with because I have some quarters I have to put in the machine out there.
Well, you can always pare your testimony down a little.
Oh, very good. I wrote some dandy stuff here, but I'll skip it.
It won't cost you as much as your commission.
I'm Scott Halliday. My brother and I grow approximately 300 acres of pears and cherries in Hood River Valley. I'll skip most everything I have here, and I'll go right to the point of why I'm against mandatory refund. I think to explain that, one must understand the overall economic impact of our industry. In my business, it's very typical to the vast majority of orchards in Hood River County in that Bartlett's ranks second in terms of production behind Anjou pears. Anjou's account for 50% to 65% of the tonnage, while Bartlett's are closer to the mid-20s. For numerous reasons, growers' returns on Anjou's have been pretty bad lately for several years, but on the other hand, Bartlett's have been pretty good. Because of this, growers are trying to make cost-saving cuts wherever they can. If a grower chooses to eliminate their assessments into the Bartlett Commission and hope of improving their bottom line, they will also choose to weaken their promotional arm. Over time, if enough growers choose not to support the Bartlett Commission, the very future of this commission could be in doubt. If this were to come true, these very same growers will find themselves paying some kind of assessment through the houses, a package, and sell their fruit, because of the fact of the matter is these assessments are needed to move the volume of fruit our industry produces. The fact of the matter is that we need promotional money to compete for shelf space against other commodities. Without a single source marketing association, such as the Oregon Bartlett Commission provides, I feel that the individual efforts to promote our products will greatly be weakened, and the overall impact to our industry will greatly suffer. I don't want to risk that this scenario might occur, and I don't believe that our industry can afford to wait and see if it happens. I also pay into the Oregon Sweet Cherry. They have made great strides over the years, and I'd hate to see a step back in face of the amount of production that we're going to see in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I have to use these glasses. I'm not as young as I used to be. My name is Ron Rivers. I farm 160 acres of pears in Hood River. Our orchard operation currently produces approximately 900 tons of Bartlett pears. As a producer of Bartlett pears, I've always tried to be an active participant in the industry matters. I currently serve on the Winter Pear Control Committee Board of Directors. I also serve as an Oregon grower on the Pear Bureau Northwest Board of Directors. I also represent the Hood River Growers Shipper Association as a representative to serve on the Northwest Horticultural Society Board of Directors. In my final admission to probable over-involvement in my pear industry, I am currently serving my first term as a member of the Oregon Bartlett Pear Commission. As a producer, I fully support the Commodity Commission Legislative Task Force and their efforts in Senate Bill 854. At this time, it is very important that the task force know that the Oregon Bartlett Fair Commission Board of Directors voted unanimously in favor of this proposed legislation. I'll skip the rest of that. I think the rest of this has been talked about, but the work you guys have been doing is very, very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Judson Parsons. Thank you, Senator Shields, and members of the committee to allow us to speak. I'm a producer member of the Oregon Bartlett Pear Commission. My family produces Bartletts in Jackson County. At the February meeting of the Fruit Growers League of Jackson County, they voted to support the position of the commission. I'm also a member of Oregon Farm Bureau, but in this issue, I do not support their position. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Forgive us for hurrying on. I'm going to call up Roy Malinsky. Malinsky? Dave
Brazelton.
Brazelton and Tim
Ratty.
Ratty.
Hi, my name is Roy Malinsky, and thanks for having me up here, Chairman Shields and the rest of the committee. I am the chairman of the Blueberry Commission, past chairman of the Oregon Raspberry Blackberry Commission. We raise blackberries, raspberries, as well as blueberries. We also have a processing operation that does fresh and frozen berries. We're the largest shipper to Japan out of the United States of fresh blueberries. Most of our business, 60%, is exported. We deal with about 25 different growers, so we are quite involved in it. It would seem to me that one of the things that should be brought up on the globalization of things, we need the commission so we can get more research and more information how we can more find these niche markets. We also, on a commission basis, are proponents for the small farmers who cannot afford to have a large amount of money invested in research projects. So we work with both the small farmers in research as well as promotional activities. As Katie Koba said earlier, we are going to be an agency or part of the state just like we have been in the past. There has been no changes except very minor changes with this bill. We'll have somebody that is on the commission from a public figure, and also we will be, I guess, be able to take it apart or put together by a legislature bill versus being able to do it by referendum in the past. It will have, basically, in the majority of the commissions, no internal changes in our operations. I think the biggest thing that a lot of the people here that are against the bill need to do is get more involved with their commission, and a lot of the changes they're referring to can happen. I think it's very important you think about this as a small organization that has better control than a large organization, federal versus state. And it's very important that we try to let the voting of our growers take care of what a commission needs, not the overall of the Farm Bureau, of which I'm a member. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Go ahead.
My name, Chairman Shields and members of the committee, my name is Tim Rady, and I represent Van Cleef Farms, where I'm on the Oregon Blueberry Commission and also a board member of the Oregon Blueberry Growers Association. We are also a producer and processor of blueberries, and we have 25 to 40 growers at different times that come in and bring berries to us for processing. And I'd like to state that I'm in favor of, we are as a farm, in favor of Senate Bill 854, and we'd like to maintain the mandatory assessment integrity. We are a member of Oregon Farm Bureau, and we disagree with their opinion that refunds should be and available. And the wording that they use, and I asked them at a meeting just last week, was if they want all refunds. They are not talking about promotion dollars per se. They say a mandatory refund assessment of all dollars. And where I disagree with that is that I believe one pay, all pay. And that I feel very strongly that way. And the other issue that I came up with is that we keep hearing that it's going to be governmental oversight, like we're going to elect a bunch of legislatures to be on this commission, but they're going to be growers that are going to be appointed. And I just wanted to continue to make that clear that we are growers. We have growers that talk to us regularly, and our commission is run based on that grower input. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Could I make one more comment on this? I'm sorry. Didn't bring it up. We were told, by the way, when this bill was coming together at the very initiative part in last September, that if we did not get a bill done, that the commissions in the state would be taken apart, and that if you as a commission did not support it, that you would not exist anymore. So this was the goal that was put to us by the Director of Ag and the Department of Justice, and also that if we were commissioners, that we would have no support of the DOJ's office if there was a lawsuit against us. If that were to happen, in other words, we had no support, there would be no commissions, because no commissioner would want to be on a commission.
Thank you. Any other questions? We have noticed... there's another person that's come more than 100 miles, George Crispin. Could you come up? And at the same time, I'm going to ask I'm going to ask Dana Branson to come and Ron Fuji. You can come up as well, okay? I just want to make sure I get keep the table filled and keep us moving as fast as we can. George, go ahead.
Okay. My name is George Crispin. I am a commissioner on the Oregon Raspberry Blackberry Commission, and I'm also the CEO of Rain Sweet Inc., which is a grower-owned cooperative. Our growers represent something in excess of 25% of all the raspberries and blackberries delivered and paid assessments to the ORBC. First, I'd like to talk as a commissioner. And Senator Shields, I think it was you that said, what happens if we do nothing? I'm pleased and proud of what the ORBC has done since I've been a commissioner and how the money is spent, and my feeling that we represent the interests of the growers in what we're doing. And I would support doing nothing. In polling my growers regarding Senate Bill 854 and getting some feedback from them, the same concerns that have been expressed regarding placing it under the oversight of the Oregon Department of Agriculture, bringing in an outside commissioner, and not having a sunset clause regarding this bill caused quite a bit of concern. So we are opposed to Senate Bill 854 as it is currently written, and in lieu of that would rather keep the status quo intact with a refundability clause if that's needed in order to preserve the commissions.
Thank you.
Senator Shields and the committee, my name is Dana Branson, and I'm representing the Oregon Sweet Cherry Commission today. I just wanted to make sure that you were aware that our commission has voted twice unanimously to support the legislation with the current amendments. And in response to comments on the refund option, it's my understanding, I'm relatively new to the Sweet Cherry Commission, but it's my understanding that our commission was formed because our voluntary programs were beginning to fail. A lot of our producers were opting out of the voluntary programs, and so that's why in 1989 we came and asked to be made commission. And the other thing I want to stress is that I think a lot of people have said this too, our commissioners are producers. So we do try to keep those lines of communication open with our growers so that they can come to us. We have open public meetings, try to make everyone aware of that, and in defense of our commissions, just to say we did send out a newsletter outlining our position on the legislation and what we felt the effects would be. So we urge you to support this bill.
When you sent out your newsletter, did you get much feedback?
I didn't get any. I didn't get any feedback at all. Okay. I didn't receive any calls.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Ron Fuji. Thank you very much for having me up. I'm the chairman of the Oregon Strawberry Commission, previous chairman of the Oregon Raspberry and Blackberry Commission, and we're in support of 854 with the amendments with the way they are right now. We represent now about 200 growers from we assess from 1,000 pounds up. So we have a wide variety of small and large growers. Large and small growing base. Our industry has shrunk since 1980 at 100 million pounds down to about 30 now, and it's really important to keep together as for our research dollars are very, very important to our growers on there and our promotion. The other thing too, all our commissioners are grower commissioners other than two processor representatives on there, and we are in support of 854. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let me say real quick that with George's testimony, we got the last testimony in opposition to 854. There are another 10 people that want to testify in favor. We just got a notice from the Senate floor that they're going to start voting on bills. They began their session 22 minutes ago. I will stay around, and I think my staff is listening on television. If there's a critical bill and I have to go, I'll adjourn the committee, but I'll stay. The others may leave, but Senator Beyer wanted to make a comment before he left to go to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would just like to thank all the people for coming today. Many of you live in my district. I appreciate you taking the time. I'm glad it was raining today, so you really couldn't be in the field fertilizing, and you were able to come today. I have spent a lot of time personally on this bill, and I continue to spend more time on this bill, and I'd like to just point out for the record, with the exception of one or two people today, I haven't heard anyone say that they don't support the commissions and commissions continuing to operate. And I think that's what everyone needs to focus on, and I'm going to work with both sides to continue to bring them together, and I'm hopeful that by the end of the week we're going to have an agreement. So I'm pointing my fingers out to people I've met with in the past, and I'm continuing to meet with you, and we're going to get this thing done because we need these commissions to continue to operate in Oregon. Thank you very much.
I want to thank Senator Beyer for all of the work. He's been doing an incredible amount of work on the bill. He'll be leaving, but I'm going to continue. You folks can step back, and I'm going to ask if Don Mosian from the Beef Council, Jim Carnes from the Grass Seed Commission, and Norm Kuhn would step forward, please.
I hate to disagree, but I do have the first bill of 84 of Senator Beyer, so I'll be right back.
Go ahead. I realize that people are moving out, but I'd like to ask you to keep the background noise to a minimum, and we'll continue. Whichever one of you wants to go first, go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Shields. My name is Don Moisen. I'm a dairy farmer from Brooks, Oregon. I've been involved in positions of dairy farmer leadership for the past 25 years.
Let's close the door and keep the noise down in the back.
I'd like to describe to you a little bit about our organization. I was actually on the Oregon Dairy Products Commission back in 1980, and at that time we consolidated the Dairy Commission with the Dairy Council. I was the last chairman of the Dairy Council, and after that we brought the Oregon Dairy Farmer Association into the office, and we've worked closely with OSU over the years, and we've actually built our organization up. We have we do work in environmental compliance on the producer side. Of course, Mr. Pratt described all the things that we do in marketing, but the reason I'm saying this is because we have an excellent organization, and we're very much opposed to mandatory refunds. We think that could tear our commission and our, I guess I would call it an umbrella support system for the rest of our program. So we are very much opposed to mandatory refunds. There's been a lot of talk about loss of grassroots control. Well, I've
looked at the bill, and it would seem to me like nothing's really changed. When I was on the commission in 1980, we had a representative from the Department of Agriculture who was with us on each of our meetings and reviewing everything that we did. I don't see a whole lot of change in the future under this legislation. I think if a producer has a problem with what's happening in the commission, he or she can go to the representative board member and talk about the problems. And in the future, under this new legislation, the commission could actually vote to defund it, so that would take care of their referendum, their loss of their referendum. So I guess in review, I don't see where we're going to be losing anything by passing this bill. However, I do think it will alleviate some of the legal problems. On another issue, I'm a past member of the Oregon Beef Council, past chairman, and I'm very much concerned about the fate of the Beef Council if they can't address some of these legal issues with their commission. I wanted to, for the record, say that the dairy industry, which is part of the Beef Council, is on record by resolution as supporting the inclusion of the Beef Council in Senate Bill 854. I would like to make a few short comments on that issue. I think that the public member issue is a big issue. However, I look back at some of the programs that we had when I was on the Beef Council, and one of the big programs that we had was we did some new image programs for the cattle industry. And the very first thing that we did is we got the public input. So if we could look at this thing positively, it could be a positive. It could enhance our efforts, and it could give us perspective of the consumers or the public, which could ultimately help our efforts. I think that the ultimate test for a commission is the product that they put out and the amount of help that they give, if that they give their producers. I don't think it's going to be the fact that we have a member on the board who does not pay his way. I don't think that's at the crux of the issue. I think it's the programs there that really make a difference. On the Dairy Commission, we have a processor representative, and he does not pay into the commission. So it's not a new thing that there's a member of the commission, a board member, that doesn't pay. So I wanted to bring that out. One thing that I did hear is that the board makeup, which is now cast into law for the Beef Council, that could be put into the section in this bill. So I'm hoping that my main concern is keeping the Beef Council safe, and I'm hoping that the things that the beef industry needs to be part of the Beef Council, I'm hoping we can work through that and put that in there. So I do really appreciate the chance to come in and give a few comments. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Norman Kuhn, and I farmed for more than 40 years in the Hulse area south of Albany. During that time, I served on the Oregon Wheat Commission for 7.5 years and 11 years on the Oregon Orchard Grass Commission. I'm opposed to the refund clause being considered for the new Oregon Commission law that's being considered by this committee. Many of the things that I had written down here, Senator, have already been said, but I think we need hopefully a little levity here. If the commission were to allow a refund of state income taxes for those who don't like the state system, then I think I could maybe condone the commission refund scheme.
Keep trying.
Until that happens, I think the commission funding should be compulsory and no refund clause be considered. I thank you for the consideration of that comment. I strongly support the self-help benefits of the commission statutes of the state and do not want to see them complicated or made weaker.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Chairman Shields, members of the committee, my name is Jim Carnes. I'm not a grower, but a farmer, but well, we'll get to the point here. I reside at 511 Stagecoach Way in Salem. I've been involved in Oregon agriculture, primarily the seed industry, for more than 53 years.
It makes you a rather seedy character.
Yeah, that's right. I've been called a little bit of that, too. I was the founder and farmer owner of International Seeds Incorporated, Halsey, Oregon, and served as a CEO until June of 1989. My industry background, and this isn't from boasting, it's from the mileage I have. Anyway, I've been president of the Oregon Seed Trade Association, the Western Seed Trade Association, and president of the American Seed Trade Association, industry representative on the Oregon Highland Bent Commodity Commission, participant in Oregon trade missions with Governor Attia and Governor Goldsmith, so it's Republican, Democrat, didn't make any difference. Participate in the USDA trade missions to Europe, Africa, South America, and Asia, and currently I am the executive director of the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association. Today I'm here representing the members of the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association, which at this time consists of 139 farm units representing over 60,000 acres of grass seed production produced in the Willamette Valley and eastern Oregon. The production of grass seed of PRB members is over 90 million pounds each year, valued at over $30 million, which presently supports the important work of the various grass seed commodity commissions with over $150,000 a year in assessments for market development and research of individual commissions. If Senate Bill 854 is passed by the 2003 legislative body and signed by the governor, the necessary changes will be made to the present state statutes to maintain the Oregon Agriculture Commodity Commissions on the present funding basis. On the other hand, if the present legislative body does not pass this legislation, funding for the Agriculture Commodity Commissions will be on a more or less on a voluntary basis. The Agriculture Commodity Commissions cannot function or represent the agriculture crops of Oregon. They were formed to represent on the basis of potential voluntary funding. I hear this thing, well, it's only dropped in some instances where you have a voluntary deal or you can get the money back if you want it. As an example, the Oregon Ryegrass Commission, not the commission, but the association, which is part of the body that helps to recommend the election of the commissioners, there are, I think, something over 400 members. The dues each year, I think, are probably about $10 or $15, if I recall, out of a total number of growers, of ryegrass growers, which is over 900, less than 50% of them belong to this association. They want the benefits of it, but they say, I don't want to pay the funds. But under the commodity commission setup, everybody pays. It's paid on an equal basis. The farmers and growers of the crops represented by each commodity commission have a voice each year on the assessment that would be charged to fund the individual agriculture commission, which covers the agriculture crop they're producing. The seed growers and the members of the commission have the authority to lower or increase the assessment each year based on the need for market development and research. Having the opportunity since 1960 to be a part in working with those commodity commissions representing the seed industry of Oregon, I can personally testify they have played and continue to play a major role in the market development in the U.S. and international markets. They've also been active in funding cooperative research and market development programs with Oregon State University, other state agriculture universities outside of Oregon, and the USDA. Their representation and support is vital in the Oregon Seed Council, an organization that has representation from all elements involved in the Oregon seed industry, the commodity commissions, the Oregon Department of Agriculture, the Oregon State University, and the Seed Trade Association. Summary: I recommend this committee support the passage of Senate Bill 854. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd ask if there's anybody any questions, but I don't have any, and I'm the only one left. I'm going to ask if Don Sturm, I guess it is, and Julian Shadeen and Patrick Levy come up next, if they're still here. You're the first one seated, so go ahead.
Okay. Senator Shields, members of the committee, my name's Don Sturm. I own a farm in Troutdale, Oregon, and I've recently had a chance to serve on the Blackberry Raspberry Commission for the state of Oregon. I'd just like to say I'm in favor of Senate Bill 854, and I am opposed to the refund amendment. I think that the refund amendment to it would cut our budget, regardless of the statistics we've heard. I think it would cut it as much as 50%. I don't have any facts to back that, but that's what I believe. When I first got on the commission, I was wondering how the commission worked, and I had some reserves about what they did too and some complaints about it. And instead of complaining about them, I got involved and went to a couple meetings and got on the commission. And since I have, I cannot believe what they've done for the farmers herself through school lunch program sales and through our research. The things, I don't know how we could survive without it. And with the refundability clause in there, it differs a lot from other commissions, because we are a small commission, and we have our intake comes from a very few growers instead of a vast amount. We have a small budget.
Thank you.
Yeah, Chairman Shields, thanks for staring to hear us all out. My my name's Julianne Shadeen. Mm-hmm. My husband and I farm 150 acres of berries for 26 years. We're members of the Farm Bureau, and I'm the current chair of the Oregon Raspberry Blackberry Commission. And everyone has made such good points today that I'm going to be very brief in stating my support for the bill without the refundability. I agree with Don that it would hurt our commission. It's comprised of mostly small growers, but a few large growers deciding that they didn't want to support the program could really be devastating to our commission, mm-hmm. as it could to other commissions from what I've heard in this process. And in terms of the notification issue, our commission also sent out a notice to our some 400 growers, and they were asked to come give public comment at our annual meeting, which was held in conjunction with the Oregon Hort Society meeting and the Ag Show, which is very well attended by the agriculture community, and we didn't have a single person show up to testify. And I can say that our growers do respond to contentious issues, because within about a two-week time frame, we had to send out a notification about a marketing order that the Marionberry Marketing Association was proposing. And we asked for public comment, and we had standing room only attendance at the experiment station and numerous phone calls to our commission office. So we do know that our growers, if they're concerned about an issue, will address our commission. So thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Shields. I thought we were going to have a personal conversation the way this was going. I am Pat Levy, and I grow hops down by Butteville, Oregon, and I'm a member of the Oregon Hop Commission, and have served twice as the chair of that commission. And the majority of Oregon hop growers do support this bill and the present commission, for the present Oregon Hop Commission. And I think maybe just to be a little different on, they support it without a refund. And I think that the reason is that many grower groups, or should we not just growers, but I know we have commissions that don't grow things, but there are many ways for people to organize. You've heard from leagues, councils, associations, and commissions. And the commissions are one option to organize producers. And I think as Oregon hop growers, we assess how we want to organize. And at the present time, our main organization is the commission. And that is because of the mandatory assessment. We could organize as an association and maybe collect 80-90% and have that uncertainty. I think that by putting a refund provision in the commissions, you basically will have the commissions will tend towards being associations. We already have that option if we want it. And we assess that as our industry shrinks, that we maybe want to be an association and not pay some of the costs associated with the commission. There is some overhead that we would eliminate by just becoming an association as a nonprofit. So I just think that by having a refund provision, it is actually limiting the options that Oregon producers will have on organizing. And I think if a group wants to put a mandatory program in place, it should exist under state law. And if, because the association program already exists. Everybody can form their own association. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that perspective. I appreciate it. We're getting there. We really are. Brad Pittenger, Kevin Zielinski, you guys are trying to make it harder for me to finish with your names. Joe Easley and Patty Owens. I'm calling all of you up because I think that's the balance of the witness list. Is there anybody else that thought they signed up and hadn't yet? Now, one of you gentlemen has to let this lady sit down first.
I'll be glad to sit down.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, go ahead. Fight over it. Why don't you start, and they'll settle it, okay? Go ahead.
I'll kind of mark myself over so I won't duplicate. But my name is Brad Pettinger. I'm a second-generation fisherman from Brookings, Oregon. And I'm also the chairman of the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission, and I appreciate the chance to come and speak today. The fishing fleet in Oregon is very diverse in vessel size, catch rate, and investment. Most are small family-owned businesses with crews of 2 to 4 people. Vessels usually participate in more than one fishery, some in all of the fisheries represented by the 4 seafood commissions. The Dungeness Crab Commission is strongly supported by our fleet. The Dungeness Crab Commission would like to go on record as supporting Bill 854. The bill addresses the legal concerns that have been brought to our attention and still keeps the integrity of the Commodity Commission program, and the commissioners slash producers will still control their respective commission. In response to the Farm Bureau's support of the refunding assessments, we believe the pooled funds from assessments allow us to enhance our industry's image and to increase opportunities for profitability through promotion, education, and research. The assessment process as it now stands allows the fishing industry to be represented through the commission, and with the benefits of that representation is a small cost of assessment spread evenly about the fleet as a percentage of their catch. A voluntary assessment would surely jeopardize the commission's ability to operate and plan for short and long-term needs. In conclusion, the Oregon Farm Bureau does not speak for every farmer in the state, and they certainly do not speak for the fishermen. Oregon is a very unique state. No one commodity dominates our state, like the corn in Nebraska or lobsters in Maine, for instance. Oregon's strength is in its diversity, and with that diversity, we need the Commodity Commission program intact so that each industry can target the programs to their individual needs. I just got a comment about some of the people saying they support the commissions, but they want their four the refunding assessments. I think we're more like Wyoming than Nebraska or Kansas are talking like that. And I think a lot of our the fisheries commissions are, it would take much to, we're teetering. I mean, we're 20-year prices or 30, 40-year prices on some of our seafood right now. And I think that be able to refund assessments would probably eviscerate the budgets we've got right now. So, thank you.
Thank you. Having served in the House of Terry Thompson, I can concur that no one speaks for the fishermen. Go ahead.
Hello, I'm Kevin Zielinski, Oregon Bartlett Pear Commission, member of the commission. I'm a pear grower in Salem, Oregon, and I simply wish to state that I'm in support of Senate Bill 854. The necessity of the commissions to function is imperative. Its benefit to the industry is very powerful, and the association with the Department of Agriculture and its administration I do not see as a threat. I see it as the possibility and the way for us to continue in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Okay, and I'm Polly Owen. I am with the hazelnut industry in Oregon. I work for 4 organizations, one of which is the Commodity Commission. And I would like to just testify in support of the bill and also in support of having a refund. I think it's very, very important, when our commission, the Hazelnut Commission, actually does only research. And so when I came to them and said, you know, there's this thing from the ODA, which they appreciate very much everything they do there. But when I said that we'd like to become a little more governmental to protect us, they actually said, this won't fly. You know, they are not going to do it. But as we read through the bill and took the points point by point, there were some things that came out. First of all, they appreciated very much having more teeth in the collections process. We do our collections by the first purchaser. Therefore, for, it's not by the individual growers, it's by somebody else who takes their funds. And we have had some problem in the past. We've had problems working with the DOJ to resolve those, and would love to have this a little more teeth to be able to collect those funds. The other thing they saw was the public member is not a problem. One of our organizations is the administration of a federal marketing order, where we have to have a public member who has been extremely useful to us, bringing another point of view, and never been hampering to our promotion progress. The other thing is, in being opposed to the refund clause, because it is a first purchaser agreement, it would become extremely burdensome to refund the monies, extremely. And you could have one major handler decide that he would encourage his growers not to pay, and truly would affect the budget greatly. So with that, I thank you very much for the opportunity.
Okay, thank you very much. Go ahead.
Senator, I guess members of the committee aren't here, so. My name's Joe Easley, and I'm administrator of the Oregon Trail Commission. And before that, I was a member of the commission at one time, and a fisherman for a good many years. But the Trail Commission was the first seafood commodity commission in Oregon. The law was changed by the 61 legislature, and we had a referendum, and it was established in 1962 in November. And in fact, I voted in that referendum. So I think the Commodity Commission for us has been a real bonus, a real plus, and without it, we wouldn't have had a voice in many things, both nationally and internationally, that we have had because of it. And we wouldn't have been able to do it as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
But I've done a good part of it in recent years, but there were other people in years before I started doing it that did it. And we were involved in bilateral negotiations, and still are, the latest one with Canada, so, over the whiting resource. And I think we finally got an agreement. 20 years. But we really do support the bill. Our law firm, by statute, the Attorney General, has said that we need these kind of changes in order to reduce the risk of lawsuit and losing. So on the advice of the attorneys, we think, or hope, that the Senate will pass it, move it on to the House, and the House will pass it, we do support the amendments, but not the last three that the Farm Bureau wanted. And we would appreciate seeing it move ahead.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that thought they signed up to testify and we managed to lose your name on the four pages in the list? Or okay. I think you got the last word on the testimony part. I want to say very quickly that we will come back to the bill in a work session. I don't know if we'll need more public hearing. That's why we wanted to do all of this. I would hope that various parties continue talking to one another and try and get to some compromises so that a bill can move without too much angst on the part of committee members. Before Senator Beyer left, he said, you know, everybody here says they support the commissions and want the commissions to be able to continue to do their business. I think everybody's trying to get to the same goal. They just seem to be using different routes to get there. So with that, I want to thank you all for staying to the end of the testimony, and be assured that we will be returning to this in the next few days or week or whatever. With that, I'll adjourn the committee.
Thanks for staying.
You're welcome.
Yeah.